Good morning and welcome to the Planning Commission meeting of October 29th. May we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Christie, Commissioner Wyatt.
Here.
Commissioner Melskow.
Here.
Commissioner Rose.
Here.
Chairperson Rappa.
Here.
Please let it be noted, Commissioner Christie is absent.
Would everyone please join us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Just before we start the public comment period, I would like
to hear. I appreciate that. The informative conference. The keynote speaker was a state senator who spoke on water. And one of the speakers talked about, would you believe the Williamson Act? And we thought it was very timely.
I would agree. Okay, thank you. We will then close the public comment period and move on our agenda to planning staff updates.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Rose, for those kind comments, and that was good timing on the Williamson Act discussion. Staff updates at this point. I'm just going to once again remind the Commission and the public of the changes in your hearing schedule for the remainder of the year. Your next meeting will be the regular date of November 8th, but you will be not having a meeting on your next regular date after that, November 22nd, because it's a holiday, so you will have a special meeting on Thursday, November 29th, in this room. And then in December, you have your regular meeting on December 13th, and then that's it for the year. And then you're back to your regular schedule in January, second and fourth Thursdays. That's really all I had for staff updates at this point, unless you have any questions.
Are there any questions of staff? Seeing none, we'll move on. The next item on our agenda is the consent agenda. I do have one speaker slip who would like to address the commission, and that's Jean-Pierre Wolf. Sir, if you could kind of go by the timer, which is 3 minutes, and introduce yourself, please.
I'm Jean-Pierre Wolf with Wolf Vineyards. It'll take less than 3 minutes. I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank the planning department and helping processing my application expeditiously. And although we are right now going through some challenging times in farming, decided to keep the operation for 20 years. That's my application, and thus keep my two boys fully employed at the vineyard and the winery, and hopefully next generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission on our consent agenda? Seeing none, we will bring it back to the commission for discussion or a motion.
May I have just a minute or two? I notice you put 20 years on some of these contracts that work from 20 years down to 10. That's kind of misleading, I think. But I don't know, and then you put 20 years on the security zone, which stays at 20 years. So it's kind of misleading to see that on both contracts when they're not the same.
Admittedly, Warren Hogue, Department of Planning, admittedly it could be a bit confusing. The Williamson Act requires a 10-year minimum term,
right,
but at local option, counties can choose to require a longer term, and this county does. These are for regular land conservation contracts in ag preserves. And in our case, we allow a 10-year minimum term when your property is within 1 mile of an urban reserve line, and that's not automatic. It's discretionary. Most contracts are 20 years. So what that means, from a practical sense, if you want to get out of a contract and you have to file a notice of non-renewal, that takes 10 years to run. So a 10-year term, theoretically, you could file in your first year, although that doesn't make a lot of sense because your taxes would go up immediately. in your 10th year or 11th year, you could file on your 20-year term to be out at the minimum 20 years. So in the case of farmland security zones, which Mr. Wolf is entering into, the Williamson Act requires a minimum 20-year term no matter what. Now, you need to remember that it's a revolving term. It keeps moving in the case of a 10-year term, 10 years out in the future or 20 years out in the future, and for the others until you reach your 11th year. So I realize it's complicated, but that's the way that it works.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there other questions on the consent agenda?
Seeing none, Madam Chair, I'll move that we approve the consent agenda, which consists of the August 30th Planning Commission minutes, as well as several ag preserves and farmland security zone contracts.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Mouska?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Okay.
Site disturbance and grading impacts. So it's something that we just looked at recently. The owner had a change of heart. It was originally located a bit of a distance from his house because our original application included a tasting room. And we've removed the tasting room, and he's thought maybe he wants to have it a little bit closer to his house just because it would be more convenient for working. So we hope to come back to you. And you might want to check with staff. I think we were continuing to a date certain in January. So we'll be working on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question of staff. Could I?
Yes, certainly.
on the first page, 1-1, the use of the land use category, you say residential rural. But then I look on page 115, and that shows ag.
I'm checking the map to see if that circle is in the right spot.
Oh.
I love computers. You have the map, and then you have the circle, and sometimes they don't always.
Well.
I believe the circle is in error.
It looks like it needs to be moved to the west.
Yes.
West? Yes.
Yes.
No, east.
Yeah, it's in that. Boy, that's a hard map to read.
We will make sure that gets fixed before this comes back.
All right, thank you.
Are there other questions of staff?
I did have one more of a observation and a request. And as I was reading the staff report, I saw that there was originally there was going to be an olive oil component to this project, which that evidently has been withdrawn because of the interpretations of some ordinances. So that intrigued me, kind of being in the business. And I know that there's at least one olive processing plant that was approved as an ag processing venture, and now we're considering it as a fat and oil venture. And I know there's one or more applicants that went through the process and thought one thing and ended up with something else. And so I did look at it. If it's fats and oils, it looks like the only place that you could process olives for to make oil and is in the commercial service or the industrial land use categories, unless you have ag land and you're doing just yours or your neighbor's. And because olive oil is a new industry, and I was wondering, is that the best way to treat it? So I would ask that at a future planning department update that you could brief us on the rules, and I think the rules ought to be changed, but, you know, the other commissioners need to hear that evidence and come to whatever conclusions they might, and then we could proceed from there. Because I know for a couple of applicants it's been very confusing, and I don't see that there would be a lot of staff work involved here. I've talked to Ms. Knoll about it, and I think she could give us a five-minute dissertation on the rules, and we could hear them and decide what we want to decide.
We can put that on a future staff update. We'd be happy to. We've actually been talking about these same issues as part of the ag tourism amendments that we're currently working on, and so we can inform the Planning Commission about the things that we've been chewing on and the problems that we see potentially with broadening the definition.
And I'll steal Mr. Orton's thunder and suggest that you, when we do put under planning staff update, it ought to be a noticed item so people would know that and maybe want to weigh in themselves.
Other comments or questions? I have a couple. Either I overlooked it or, I don't know, the amendment to the fire safety plan, I didn't get it in my packet. So if that could be included. And secondly, in the text of the staff report, it talks about phases, and yet when I look at the time limits, 1-13, number 33, it doesn't seem to indicate that there are phases to this project, and we might want to consider, as we have with others, time limits that relate to the phases.
Okay.
And maybe that's changed. I don't know.
First question, the amendment to the fire safety letter is actually included. It's on 1-50.
Introduce item number 2.
Hearing to consider a request by Randy McNamee for a vesting tentative track map, track 2711, using the Transfer Development Credits Program and a conditional use permit. County file number SUB 2004-00300, Supervisorial District 1, Karen Knoll, Project Manager.
Actually, I'm going to step in. Cammie Griffin, County Planning.
Before you do, let me announce that I live very close to this project, greater than 500 feet, but about 1,000 feet. From it, it's within my view shed. I recognize I don't have to step down, but I will. I have opinions on the project. My mind's made up.
Enough said.
wouldn't be appropriate for me to make a decision here.
Okay.
Thank you.
You already have.
Well, in the public arena.
Okay. Please continue on.
Well, starting over, Cammie Griffin, County Planning. Elizabeth Kavanaugh is the project manager on this. However, Elizabeth has been out sick actually for over a week, so I'm going to try and step in and take over for her. This is the subdivision of a 34-acre parcel into four clustered lots and one open space lot, and it is a TDC receiving site. The property is located on 41 and Homestead. It's this L-shaped property here. You'll notice from the topographic lines, the property is quite steep in the rear. I have some pictures of that also. This is the proposal. The four clustered lots are down here, 2.5-acre lots, leaving a very large open space parcel with a building site on it. And this is a close-up. You can see that two of the four clustered lots already are developed with residences. Here would be the traditional land division, and in this case, this property really is a nice cluster property because of the steepness of the slopes. You could actually divide this thing up into 7-acre parcels, but you would have a lot of grading necessary in order to, for instance, construct a driveway to serve this parcel all the way back here. Some photos of the site. This is the existing driveway. And you can start to see that hilly area in the back of the site. This is one of the existing houses. Again, you can start to see this hilly area. And now I'm going to shock you because this is taken at a different time of year. It wasn't so green. But this is a photo of generally what the open space parcel will look like. With that, staff is recommending approval of the project, both the conditional use permit and the tentative map. I do have a memo with some added finding and two added conditions. They all relate to the transfer of development credit program, and this is really housekeeping. It's a way for us to track through the conditions that this was a TDC receiver site. A little bit more on the TDC receiver site. It actually has a base density of 4 lots and could have qualified for 6 lots with the bonus density allowed by the TDC program. In this case, the applicant was only asking for 5. Again, the site kind of lends itself to that so that you're not building on that steep area in the back. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions of staff? Could I ask the secretary to check the monitor? Thank you. Okay. No questions from the commissioners. I do have one speaker slip. I believe it's from the applicant's representative. Would you state your name for?
Good morning. Thank you, Chairperson Rappa. My name is Jamie Kirk, and I am representing Randy McNamee this morning. The staff report as well as the staff presentation appropriately summarized the project. This is the cluster division using the TDC density bonus provisions. We aren't asking for the maximum density that we can have using the TDCs. We really looked at two things on the site: is what would be the best use of the site, the cluster division being the best use of the site. As you can see in the pictures, we're protecting a really magnificent viewshed area, and we designed the density to what would fit on the site on the lower line areas. And I think, as you can see in the staff report, this project is indicative of what the TDC program as well as the cluster divisions were written for. It really meets the standards. So we are here for questions.
Representative? Seeing none, thank you.
For the change on Condition 14, I'm sorry, Cami Griffin County Planning, the change on Condition 14, which is on your page 2-7, if you have it read prior to the recordation of the final map, the applicant shall demolish or bond for the removal of the existing barn. That's fine. We don't need to put a time limit in the condition because typically our bonds only go 2 years. And that's what we've done in the past with other accessory structures like this, consistent.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone here who would like to comment on this during our public comment period? Seeing none, and I have no speaker slips, we'll return it to the commission. Is there questions or a move to action?
Yes, well, I have a few questions, and I apologize that I haven't gone through this as carefully as I would have liked to, but I see a number of impacts here. And I guess just to start off here, I'll question maybe some of these mitigations a bit. I'm a bit conflicted here because I really want to support the idea of the clustering of these lots, and this looks like a pretty good way to do it. But I'm still not sure this is the appropriate place for this subdivision at all. So the more general question, I guess, in light of the fires of the last weeks or so, could we just discuss the kind of fire protection or the notes from the county fire on this site? I guess the general question or suggestion would be that some of these more sort of rural lots are more subject to fire, more difficult to protect. So maybe some question of how right it is to be subdividing these lots at all. County Fire has signed off on this project, and
And there are some additional requirements for rural residences that are standard in the ordinance, including, you know, type of roofing and clearance. Their letter is on page 248 and 49, their fire safety plan. And so they'll require, you know, a good access way. They have to have vegetation clearance. those kinds of items. And then in the code itself, currently, there's requirements for, I believe it's a, and I may be using the wrong terms, a Class A roof that's a non-flammable material. So with that, they feel that this is a appropriate fire safety plan. Typically, CDF supports the concept of clusters because they can send less engines to try and save more homes when they're clustered together than when they're spread out on the larger lots. So that may have also played into their willingness to issue a fire safety plan.
Also, the letter indicates that this is considered a moderate fire severity zone, which I would guess also played into their...
Probably also, yes.
As opposed to a higher high,
right, which I believe that we're going to be having some future discussions on with new maps that identify high severity fire zones.
Right, CAL FIRE's in the process of redoing all their maps.
Do we know how this parcel will rate?
Well,
with the new zone?
No, I don't. But from what I understood from the presentation they made to us, what was happening in a majority of cases is a lot of our high fire hazard areas were becoming very high fire hazard area. So I, in the presentation they made to us, they didn't talk a lot about moderate fire changing.
Whether those would change over to high rating or ranking then. So some question of that. And I will note that I see a 12 to 15 minute response time, which
is pretty good.
Pretty good. Relative. I'd just like to also draw attention then to the standard letter, page 247 in our packet then, from the Air Pollution Control District. And we see it again, but I'm just going to read this again because I'd like to remind us the problem with this parcelization or subdivision of land that's not too close to our urban areas. And the project, like so many others, falls below our emission significance thresholds and is therefore unlikely to trigger a finding of significant air quality impacts requiring mitigation. However, we are very concerned with the cumulative impacts resulting from the ongoing fracturing of rural land and increasing residential development in areas remote
zonings. And the Air Pollution Control District has taken a position that any subdivision outside of an urban area is something that they can't support and is inconsistent with the Clean Air Plan. However, you'll note in their letter that you read, it doesn't trigger a finding of a level of significance relative to CEQA. It's really a position that they take relative to their Clean Air Plan. In this particular case, I put this graphic back up. We're only about 3 to 4 miles from the edge of the city of Atascadero. So this isn't one of those residential rural properties that's way out. And in fact, we have some residential rural properties that are probably 10, 15, 20 miles from the closest urban reserve line, where we zoned it that way to recognize some existing underlying antiquated subdivision lots or something like that. In this case, this is fairly close to the city, has good access back into the city, and part, again, perhaps part of the reason that fire was less concerned is they would have the mutual aid agreement with the city of Atascadero for fire response also. So it's a tough call. Any subdivision in the rural area is further subdividing rural properties. In this case, with the cluster and keeping the development off of those hillsides and its closeness to the city of Atascadero, planning staff felt that they could support not only the subdivision but the additional lot granted through the TDC program.
Thanks. Just a few more questions then. On the mitigation.
Mm-hmm.
We see some sort of impacts on the list. So, again, a number of impacts in mitigation. So if we could just go through those. First of all, aesthetics, page 222. We've got an 1A, create an aesthetically incompatible site open to public view, and some mitigation. Would staff just go through those, so help me understand them a little better? And we've also got 1C, then change the visual character of the area. As I read through mitigations here.
Elizabeth Kavanaugh, County Planning Staff. The visual mitigations, if you'll see they're checked on page 222 and then on page 2-38, there's the actual mitigations that offset those impacts in detail. And what those are water tank placement and making sure that the water tanks are not a visible feature of the area. Let's see, we've got colors to make sure the houses match the environment. Let's see, those are the visual mitigations that were necessary, but which are pretty mild because of the clustering itself, which put all those houses off the hill. And truly, the way I saw it was the clustering was the basic visual mitigation of this map. And that's what brought the visual impact to less than significant. Adding on these colors and, you know, landscaping the water tank and that kind of stuff was I don't want to call it icing on the cake, but it was just something that made it even more less impact visually.
So the primary mitigation for the impact was the fact that it was clustered.
Yes.
And clustered down the hill.
Off the hill.
Right.
Okay. So understanding that, moving on to agricultural resources, then our page 223, 2B, impact and mitigation impair agricultural use or other property or result in conversion to other uses. If staff could just discuss that a bit. I think we had a letter from the Ag Department on this, too, didn't we? Is anyone here from the Ag Department?
Doesn't look like it. And, yes, you did have a letter from Ag. They identified the possibility of an impact as a result of conflict between some agricultural uses in the area and these parcels. And they recommended several measures, including a buffer and the right to farm, and both of those have been pulled forward as conditions. And actually, the buffer is only 60 feet. That's not a very big buffer. And this, again, is an issue where we have that residential rural zoning interfacing with ag zoning. We've got the potential of...
What buffer would be adequate then for the grazing?
Yes, we deferred to the Ag Department in those decisions.
Okay, it seemed like there was some question of that. I wish we had someone from Ag here to discuss that a little more. But.
Well, I think the question that arises is, as we've seen, more intensified agricultural uses are more the norm than they are the exception, especially as properties change from cattle grazing to vineyards, basically. And I guess the question is, will the 60-foot buffer zone be sufficient in the future? Or does it only address the fact that it's now in a less intensive agricultural use?
Well, they do tend to look at what the site could potentially be used for, so there must have been something about the property that's not adjacent to the open space parcel but to the clustered lots that made them feel that 60 feet was adequate. I do note in their letter, which is on page 2-45, they talk about the open space parcel of this cluster division actually accomplishing the goals of the agricultural buffer.
But that's not the area we're talking about.
No, you're talking about the clustered lots.
Mm-hmm. Right, the
smaller lots.
Parcels 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, it's more than one parcel.
And, yeah, so that would be along the east side of the property generally.
Madam Chair, I might be able to help. I worked on the El Pomarstre area plan update, and we looked at this whole area very carefully. And this property is basically right on the edge of the less steep area, and then the big ranches going up the Eureka grade are just east and north of it. And they are used at best for grazing. They're fairly steep. It's probably not likely that there would be an intensification of agricultural use there, although you should probably never say never. And I think that's probably factors that led the Ag Commissioner's office. I'm sort of stepping in for them since they're not here, and if they disagree with me, they can tell me later. I think that probably led to the lesser buffer distance being recommended by that office.
So am I right in assuming then that 60 feet is to the edge of the building site?
The proposed building site, yes, I believe so.
I'm looking on 217, and that's kind of what it looks like.
In fact, it almost looks like a portion of the development footprint comes into the zone. But maybe if these maps are really tiny.
Oh, the existing house is right at the edge of the buffer. And again, typically the Ag Department doesn't require existing structures to be moved or anything like that. They assume the folks have been living there, so...
Elizabeth Cavanaugh, County Planning Staff. Just one last bit of information. On your agriculture letter on
2-44 or 45,
for the second page of it, it calls out that the underneath the little chart there that the soils are not considered well suited to cultivation due to high erosion and high slopes hazards. So the Ag Department felt that the existing ag on site was what we're going to get on that site right now, and that this 60-foot buffer was all that was needed.
Well, I guess if you read further into that, if you read that entire paragraph,
yes.
It says these soils, while not considered well-suited to cultivation due to their high erosion setters, are utilized fairly extensively in the North County for grazing and for the production of tree crops, wine grapes, and dry farmed grain. My very limited knowledge of wine grapes is they grow just about anywhere, it seems like.
If the steepness were a problem, you wouldn't see them in a lot of areas of Greece and Cinque Terre. And
anyway, onward with your questions, I
steepness
guess.
Steepness doesn't stop the growing, no. Okay, yeah, that's how I read that sentence, too, that they are used. It's extensively for production of tree crops and dry farmed grain, so that there could be some intensified usage, or that wouldn't be a stretch of the imagination to see some intensified usage there. So moving on then in that letter then to water resources, the final paragraph in this letter from the Ag Department is regarding the water resource or questioning. And so this development could adversely impact the quantity of water resources available for agriculture. Could staff discuss that a bit? I see in the right is the suggestion.
Well, we kind of offer a mitigation, but we don't indicate in the analysis that one is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Now, did it get put into the...
And so the question, I guess, then on that 233.14d, then, how do we know we're not changing the quantity or movement of available surface groundwater if those studies tests have not yet been done?
Well, the first paragraph kind of explains what, if you read, it starts on the end of 233.
Preliminary evidence, what might that be, preliminary evidence? It seems to suggest it's possible there will be sufficient water supply, but how do we know?
Before final map, the standard conditions of approval for individual wells and septic tanks requires that you actually drill wells on each of the sites. You have to prove up water on each of the sites before you can record the map. So if there's an issue with water and they can't prove up adequate water on each of the proposed parcels, then they can't record the map. And it may be that that standard requirement was adequate in this case to mitigate for any concern that about water, since you have to prove it up before you can record.
Okay, so that helps me understand then how that water would be shown on the lots, but I still don't understand then how that would show that we're not affecting the agricultural water, and good Miss Kinnicky is here, so maybe she can help us on this, but I still don't see how the recommended mitigation measure C3 on our 246, assessing groundwater resources to ensure the proposed subdivision will not adversely impact water supplies for ag uses. How will we know that from the drilling of these wells? We might show water on the parcels, but this action wouldn't show us that water coming out of those wells isn't adversely impacting the adjacent ag.
And that's true. And if you'd like to add a condition, it would be added to 15. We've already added I, so that would be new condition J, to read exactly how the...
Can you just give us what page you're on?
I'm sorry, 2-8. And it would read identically to the wording in 2-46 with the intro line of, at the time of application for construction permits, assess groundwater resources to ensure the proposed subdivision will not adversely affect. The other place that you could put it would be to do that in advance of recordation, which would be new condition.
Wouldn't that be a more appropriate place?
Possibly, yes.
At the time of recordation.
Prior to recordation.
Sure.
So perhaps the best place to put that then would be insert a condition 15 and renumber all the following conditions. And if you wanted to do that, again, it would read identically the same as on 2-46, but you would do the lead-in prior to recordation of the map, assess groundwater resources to ensure the proposed subdivision will not adversely impact water supplies or quality for adjacent agricultural uses.
And that would be on page 2-7, a new 15?
Am I in? 15, yes.
On and then seven. Subsequent numbering change.
I see that Kinnicky has come from the Agricultural Department. Could you address some of these issues, the water issue for us, first off?
Perhaps for her benefit, you might want to repeat just outline quickly the questions.
Yeah, sure. Well, reading the letter from your office, we see a couple of mitigation measure recommendations. So I guess bringing all of these forward, but we are on the water, so that third, the water-related issue would be, in order to approve this, that the groundwater resources should be assessed to ensure that the proposed subdivision will not adversely impact water supplies to the adjacent agricultural use. And the suggestion is that this could be conditioned to some sort of assessment, but I guess I would be curious what that would be, whether that's a standard condition that we would see in projects that got omitted.
Mr. Lombard, that we're not aware of, maybe after this report was done, because in just quickly scanning the engineering geology report, they're not making any comment about concern about groundwater at all, and in fact saying it's a very available in the area.
I'm thinking that report would be sufficient, but if there needs to be a break for me to review it, I'd be happy to do that, if that would help with your questions.
Well, since it has been raised as a question and we haven't seen how it's been answered, I would appreciate it, feel a little better and I haven't seen this or don't have any reference that I know of to this report.
Okay.
So if you would be willing, I would
certainly
feel better about that. Could you also, while you're up, then address the buffer, the issue of the buffer then? The 60-foot buffer and adequate for what's there now grazing versus what could be there in the future?
Actually, all of our buffer recommendations, when they're adjacent to agriculturally zoned land, look at the potential of what that could be as well. So it's not just what's currently there, but what's there in the future. So this recommendation is based for future intensification. And I believe the reason that it was at the 60 feet is due to the circumstances of the site, topography, et cetera. And so it was analyzed, and 60 feet was the preferred, even based on the intensification. Our future intensification, I should say.
Okay.
Future potential for intensification.
Okay, so seems adequate then.
Yes.
Either way. Okay.
All right.
I think that's all I think of.
I would just add, for purposes of the water analysis, I think Jim Orton from County Council, Cami had initially indicated that we look at the preliminary studies of the water that's available there, and then you have to prove up water before it's recorded, and there generally is not mitigation measures with regard to water on their property unless the studies indicate that that's a problem initially. So I think putting an additional condition in would be over and above what we normally do.
But would that be inappropriate then, or would it just be
somewhat
different?
Well, given the studies that they indicated, it sounded to me like it maybe was not necessary. But I would defer to them in analyzing what's in the file.
I guess if we just have reference to that analyzation, which maybe we do in somewhere in here, but I guess I'd just like to see some reference.
Each property owner has a right to use the water that's underneath their land, and as far as the ability to subdivide, we require preliminary evidence that water is available and then require that it actually be there before we subdivide. So,
but again, how does that address the issue then of how that affects the neighbors? And if a goal of ours is to protect the agricultural use, how are we to do that without some promise?
I think you have some conflicting rights here. I mean, each owner has the right to use the water that's underneath the land. But it sounded to me like there were already some studies in the record that may have addressed this issue.
Okay. We did determine that the engineering geology report was actually prepared after the Agriculture Department wrote their letter, and so probably was done in response to the concerns raised. And it may be that this is fine to meet the condition that I read into the record, or that they might have to do a little more work with this report. But the two existing residences on site, they have existing wells. Their well borings are showing adequate water. And then the report notes that this is an area of good groundwater. So I don't have a problem at all with leaving the condition in. It may be that it's already been met through this engineering geology report, or that a little bit more information is necessary.
Okay. We've gotten a little bit out of sequence here. Is there anyone from the public that wished to address the commission on this issue? I don't have any speaker slips, but seeing none, does the applicant's representative care to offer any final comments?
Jim Orton again. I would just add, before she testifies, Cami had mentioned about adding a condition on bonding. I think there also should be a performance agreement if you decide to do that. Mm-hmm. Normally,
I'd like to start with the comments relating to fire safety. As part of our initial design and working on this project, once we had the cluster design in place and had a map, we did bring CAL FIRE out onto the site. and had them look at the site, look at the access, just to make sure to be up front to address any comments that they had. And they were appreciative of the cluster design, keeping the houses clustered in one area and off the hillside. So that was something that they actually did come out on the site and look at it. In regards to the additional conditions for water, we have, as stated, received preliminary evidence from Environmental Health, and that was based on submitting well logs. There's three wells on the site right now, two to serve the existing residences and one that is it was an older ag well. And this, I gave Elizabeth the pump test we had for one. It's 40 gallons per minute, so we've got adequate water on the site, and we've done the engineering geology report, and we had the conversations with staff, and it's unfortunate we're on our third planner on this project, so some stuff gets lost as you move through it, and provided the additional well reports and made sure that we at least addressed water availability at some level in this report to satisfy the concerns brought up by ag. So we'd like to preferably and stick with the information that's been provided and in the record in which the environmental review was written on and move forward.
So is it my understanding you'd prefer not to have the suggested condition number 15?
Well, with having the suggested condition 13 or 15, it's I guess we maybe need a little more definitive reasoning on what we need to provide. I mean, we've provided well reports. We've had an engineering geology report completed. I don't know what other information we would need to provide.
Okay, and then the other you had requested or bond for,
yeah.
And County Council has suggested entered into a performance agreement or bond for.
And
did I state that correctly?
Performance agreement and bond for.
And bond for, okay.
So in other words, there's an agreement that within X number of time, I'll remove the barn and then you bond for it.
I guess in my thought process, that just goes together, that we would expect to have that.
Okay, so you have no problems with that. Your
Absolutely.
Your main concern is with the addition of a condition number 15.
Yeah, I think we've provided information into the record.
All right.
Okay.
Any other questions of the applicant's representative from the commission? We will then close the public hearing portion, bring it back. Staff have some additional comments on number 15.
It may be that the information that's been submitted is adequate to meet the condition 15. I don't think there's a problem with leaving it in and having both Environmental Health and the Ag Department determine whether or not that the information submitted is adequate. Given that mitigation was not brought forward and there was subsequent information, I suspect that the information that was submitted did satisfy the Ag Department, but you know, having the condition in there is good.
And could you reread the condition?
It would be prior to recordation of the final map, assess groundwater resources to ensure the proposed subdivision will not adversely impact water supplies or quality for adjacent ag uses.
Could we use maybe? Show evidence instead
sure.
of assess,
Absolutely.
Which would then allow existing materials existing that support that.
So prior to recordation of the final map, show evidence that groundwater resources show evidence.
Maybe that wasn't a good suggestion. I guess the point I'm getting to is that this information may be already available, and I didn't want to see us have to reinvent the wheel on this one.
How about show evidence that the proposed subdivision will not adversely impact water supplies or quality of adjacent ag uses?
That works.
Are the other commissioners in agreement with that? Okay. Are there any other questions or comments from the commission or a move for action on this item?
Well, just a comment. I th- think I'm going to get outvoted, but I do appreciate the work of staff and the applicant on this, because I think this cluster subdivision is definitely a better than the standard straight subdivision, where we're getting some open space and some bit of clustering. But I won't be supporting this subdivision, because I don't think this kind of rural subdivision supports agriculture. I think some mitigations have been put in here to help protect agriculture, but this kind of subdivision increases the costs of rural land and has other impacts, and I don't think it's orderly development.
Be new finding J, as shown in the memo dated with today's date.
Mm-hmm.
An I added to condition 15, mm-hmm. as shown on the memo. New condition 19. Adding condition 15 and renumbering the following conditions. Condition 15 to read, prior to recordation of the final map, provide evidence that the subdivision will... not adversely impact water supplies or quality for adjacent agricultural uses. And that would be it.
Did you indicate condition 14, the added language?
Yeah.
Prior to recordation of the final map, the applicant shall demolish or enter into a performance agreement and bond for the removal of the existing barn located on proposed lot 3.
Okay.
Is that all of them?
I believe that's it.
Yeah. Okay, so move.
Is there a second? I'll second the motion. Any further discussion? Roll call. Just another try here. since I won't be supporting this, I look at sprawl as a big problem, and having this kind of development outside of our urban areas and at some distance from them has huge costs. And I guess we just see it parcel by parcel. So here we are again. Okay, roll call, please.
Commissioner Milska?
Yes.
Commissioner Chairperson Rappa?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
No. Okay. I believe even though there's only three of us, Ms. County Council, the motion passes.
Yes.
All right. Will the Secretary please introduce item number 3?
Hearing to consider a request by Austin Canella for a conditional use permit, county file number DRC 2006-00159, supervisorial district number 1, Bill Robeson, project.
And the record will show that Commissioner Rose is rejoining us. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chairwoman Rappa, Planning Commissioners, Bill Robeson, County Planning Staff. I'd like to just right off the bat let you know that the applicant is requesting a continuance on this item. I don't see them in the audience, but in discussions with them, their reasoning is based on maybe the past hearing that took place in July, which we only had 4 commissioners. And the result of that hearing was a 2-2 tie. They also feel that the contentiousness of this item is more appropriately heard by 5 commissioners. So I just wanted to put that out to you. The decision is entirely yours, though.
Mr. Robeson is prepared to make a staff presentation if you want one, or if you want to just continue it, then to save time, he wouldn't make the presentation.
Okay, this has been advertised, and is anyone from the public here to, I do have one speaker slip for this item. I do understand the reason for the request for continuance. It's exactly the same reason we continued it in the past. With the commission's indulgence, I'd like to forego the staff report and move to opening this to the public, if that's acceptable. Okay. This is the time then for the public to comment on this item. I do have one speaker slip. It's from Lisa Solomon. You have 3 minutes, and please state your name for the record.
Hello, I'm Lisa Solomon. I'm the police chief with the city of Paso Robles, and I just wanted to come and address this item. I have sent a letter to the commission previously regarding this item. I wanted to appear personally and give you my thoughts and feelings on it, considering the proximity to my city. First of all, I wanted to talk a little bit about the issue of marijuana and marijuana dispensaries relative to the violation of federal law consideration. The issues that I think that you should consider in authorizing this type of a activity in your area, and the secondary effects that can affect your communities as well as my own being so close. Federal law clearly and unequivocally states that marijuana-related activities are illegal, and despite California there has been consideration and even an attorney general review regarding medical marijuana and the sanctioning of medical marijuana dispensaries within communities and whether or not the boards that approve them are not authorizing a federal offense to occur within the community. Basically, it's considered aiding and abetting, if you will, and that's something to be considered. The secondary effects that I'm concerned about are burglaries, robberies, illegal marijuana sales, and other related problems that police chiefs throughout this state have seen that have started to occur around medical marijuana dispensaries that have been opened in other communities. Problems such as selling to patients who are selling to non-patients, bogus doctor recommendations, phony doctor recommendations, doctors writing phony recommendations to healthy patients, money laundering, tax evasion. The people who have put together this dispensary claim it to be a dispensary for the purpose of giving, doing something good for the community, for the health and safety of those who need it. The bottom line is that this is a business. They are there to make money, and even the compassionate care and use laws in the state of California that try to provide an exemption under federal law state that you can't make money in order to do this, and that specifically violates state law. So in my opinion, there is no valid use. There is no good to come of this in our community or in yours, and I would strongly, strongly oppose it and look to you to do the right thing and oppose it as well. So I'd take any questions if you have any.
Are there questions? Yes.
I did. Supposing the City of Atascadero authorities approved one in the City of Atascadero over your objections, what would you do as a police chief? Would you think that would increase your patrols, or would you go by there more often, or what would you do if it was located on 123 Elm Street somewhere?
Are you talking about, now you remember I'm the police chief in Paso Robles, so
right.
You're saying Atascadero.
I'm sorry, I got confused.
Okay, but, do you mean if my council approved one in Paso Robles?
Right, so what would you, as a police chief, would you institute some new protocols, or what?
Well, I would imagine that we would have to do something to be able to address issues that I am certain that we are going to have from a place of that nature that's going to open up in my city. Yes, I would be very concerned. For example, the problems that occurred in Morro Bay, some of the issues that I just read to you came directly out of a staff report written by the Morro Bay Police Chief and some problems that he ran into in his city when that dispensary was opened in his city. So, of course, they had to do some directed enforcement at that location to deal with some of the things that happened outside of that location. And even some of their city council members directly saw, for example, people who had patient cards who went inside the dispensary, purchased marijuana supposedly legally, and then came out and sold to non-carded patients right on the street. So they had hand-in-hand exchanges occurring in front of their dispensary, those types of activities occurring. Yes, so there would be things that I would want to do with both my marked police units, my uniformed officers, and perhaps undercover officers to deal with those types of activities. And that takes resources, and it takes time. And I have, quite frankly, a lot of other things in my community that I could be using those resources and that time to deal with. I don't want to create another problem for my community to handle.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any further questions?
Yes, one more for the chief. Mm-hmm. Chief, are these problems documented throughout the state then? We know specifically of our Morro Bay case, but as far as I know, the owners or applicants here aren't related to the Morro Bay owners or operators. That's the case? They're not related?
I don't know that they are related,
okay.
But I do have a whole list of cases. The California Police Chiefs Association for California has done white papers on this issue and have collected documentation throughout the state of criminal activity that has occurred at dispensaries or surrounding dispensaries that have been opened in their areas, and have also documented how dispensaries have opened and have subsequently been shut by boards like yourself because of the problems that have occurred there. If you'd like me to read any of those, I can list the cities. I can provide that information to you. I can give you anything you'd like.
Is Santa Barbara one of those? Because it's my impression that the applicant
has simple medical purposes. And so I would implore you really to consider this seriously.
I would be interested in some copies of the information you have.
Absolutely.
I don't have them. Let's see, I had another question.
Well, maybe Jean has one that might jog your memory.
Yes, I would like to have that information also.
Absolutely.
Sure, send it to the secretary, who will in turn send it to all of us. So we all have the same.
Did it jog your memory?
Yes, thank you. Sorry, slow mode. Not quite enough caffeine. And Chief, were you involved in the process? I'm thinking maybe you're newly appointed chief and we're not involved in the process of creating or crafting this county ordinance that does allow this use.
I was not involved in the process. I am a new chief. I do know that my prior chief objected to the ordinance, and we in fact have an ordinance against dispensaries in our city.
In the city, okay.
Yes.
Because I also wasn't involved in this process of crafting the ordinance, but surely there was a chance in this process for opposition to be expressed.
Oh, the opposition was expressed. I think it's. I hope I'm not overstating, but I believe all of the police and sheriff, I don't think there were any that supported, as I recall.
I believe you're right.
It should tell us something.
Well, perhaps it does. Okay, thank you very much. I do have another speaker slip, but I'm not quite sure which item it's on.
It's on this one.
It is on this item. Okay, thank you very much. The next speaker slip I have is for Rob Rosales. Am I saying that correctly, hopefully? You have 3 minutes, sir, and if you'd state your name for the record, we'd appreciate it.
I apologize for that. My name is Robert Rosales. I'm here on behalf of the Templeton Chamber of Commerce. Preparation-wise, we were going to have representatives from the Unified School District here, as well as Templeton Area Advisory Group, but we were under the impression that this was going to be discussed this afternoon. First, I'd like to state that we appreciate all the time and effort everybody's put into this. This is the sixth time that I've personally appeared before county officials on this matter. Past staff reports have stated that because of the complexity of the issue, the community that is immediately affected, their opinion should carry great weight. You do, like I said, I've been here six times. Representatives from the Unified School District, Templeton Area Advisor Group have been here. Law enforcement officials have voiced their opposition to it. Our district supervisor has voiced his opposition to this. We would ask at this time that you do take this matter under consideration as it is written, as the current ordinance is stipulated. The regulation as written it is apparent that it was written in haste, and it does not sufficiently provide direction for those that must implement the regulation. Today, according to the staff report, we are asking for an exception in order to approve this facility. Already, we're asking for exceptions to a rule that out of the gate is flawed. On its face, the application does not follow the requirements as currently stated. Thus, we ask that you deny this and let the Board of Supervisors, the ones that wrote up this ordinance and the ones that approved it, let them discuss this further and hopefully give us a little more direction as to what we can do with this. I would also note that it is my impression that there is a new church facility on the premises where this facility will be located, and that that facility does provide and does advertise for daycare service.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Thank you.
Oh. Yeah, I had one. Just because they're not here, and I know you're involved with the Timlin Area Advisory Group, and you are in the community, in your opinion, is it the position of TAG in the school district, they're also opposed to it?
Templeton Area Advisory Group does have concerns about this. I believe they've sent a letter listing those concerns, and the Templeton Unified School District Board has written letters and made statements in opposition to this facility.
Okay, and you're representing the chamber, and is this an official viewpoint? Do you guys have minutes? And
yes, we have it documented, and like I said, we've been here. This is the sixth time on behalf of the chamber that I've been here.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission on this item? Okay, we'll bring it back to the commission.
I had a question for county council, and that is somebody told me that you, your office, advised the board in a public meeting that if they approved it, that they would somehow be...
That is the request to the next meeting, staff? Yes?
Pardon me. Bill Robeson, County Planning Staff. The actual date for the continuance was anticipated to be on January 10th of 2008.
Okay. Is there a motion then to continue this item to January 10th, 2008?
Yes. I move that we continue this item to January 10th, 2008.
Is there a second to the motion? I will second the motion.
I'll speak to the motion, and I think we need to recognize that this probably is not going to stop here, so maybe it would be the benefit for us to act on it and send it to the ultimate authority, which would be the board.
Okay.
But no matter what we do here, it's
correct.
Likely to go to the board. So what, I'm not sure what the suggestion is there, that you would like to just see us dispense with the dispense.
I just assumed we disapproved it today and got it over with. And maybe I would expect the applicant would appeal that decision. And again, my reasons are the same. It's not consistent with the character of the neighborhood that's been expressed by members of the neighborhood, you know, the official representatives, the chamber, the advisory group, the school district. And as been evidenced into the record, the law enforcement agencies are against it. So therefore, I don't see how we could ever make the finding that it's consistent with the character of the neighborhood and not contrary to its orderly development. You know, it's not a general retail use. It's got issues, and we should disapprove it.
Okay, that's not the motion we have before us, but that's certainly a good comment. Go ahead.
And I was just going to mention the church that has a daycare center much closer than 1,000 feet.
Any other comments on the motion? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes.
Commissioner Malskow?
No.
Commissioner Rose?
No.
Is there another motion then for us to consider on this item?
I move to deny the application based on findings inconsistency with the lack of consistency with the character of the neighborhood and contrary to its orderly development.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
Further discussion? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Mioska?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
No.
Chairperson Rappa?
No. Is there another motion on this item? In order to move this along, I will again offer a motion to continue this item to January 10th, 2008. Is there a second?
Yes. Procedurally, though, what happens on these?
I guess we need to look to our right to get the answer to that if we continue to go back and forth here. Is it Diablo Canyon all over again?
You either have to hear the item or continue it. Mm-hmm. So. There either have to be three votes to continue the item, or you have to hear the item.
And that would require three also.
Well, it would take three, of course, to
do anything. I guess I'd like to speak to the motion. We continued it last time because we only had four commissioners present. The situation, unfortunately, has not changed. And I do believe that it's our responsibility to review conditional use permits. They certainly move on to other bodies or another body if there is a disagreement with our decision. But I would encourage my fellow commissioners to vote in support of a continuance. Roll call.
Commissioner Chairperson Rappa?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Mioska?
No.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
All right. The item will be continued then to January 10th. And as a could staff please make sure that we have the information about any changes in the neighborhood uses that are existent, that could be existing, that aren't indicated in our staff report at this time?
I believe the police chief from Paso Robles is going to supply that information. Is that correct?
No, on no. Perhaps a new daycare facility.
This was the fact that there was a church. Recognizing, I don't believe there's a rule against having marijuana dispensaries next to a place where we take care of little kids, but if that is in fact true, that they do have a nursery there, it would be useful to know that.
Yes, we'll look into that, and I'll give you the information at our next hearing.
Thank you very much. At this time, we will take a 15-minute break and return at 10:25, is that correct?
Yes. And coastal land use ordinance. County, no county file number, all supervisorial districts. Terry Waller, project manager.
Madam Chair, before Terry gets started, I'm Warren Hogue from the Department of Planning and Building. I'd just like to say a few introductory words. What you're seeing today is a culmination of about a 2+ year effort on the part of the County Agricultural Preserve Review Committee to review the rules of procedure that the county has adopted to implement the Williamson Act, also known as the Agricultural Preserve Program. And their motivation, their charge to do that is in the rules of procedure, where they are designated as the primary advisory body to the Board of Supervisors on the Agricultural Preserve Program, and they are charged to periodically review the rules to see if they need to be updated to reflect current trends, whether there's any housekeeping or procedural issues that need to be taken care of, and if there's been any changes to the Williamson Act and other state laws that need to be reflected in our rules of procedure. The APRC, I'm going to use the acronym because otherwise it's a long name, the APRC has done that. They went to the board for a first look at proposed amendments last year. Some of them were authorized, some of them weren't. What you have before you today are those amendments that the Board of Supervisors has authorized for processing. There's been an environmental determination prepared for the amendments, and we're now here for a hearing before your Planning Commission, and then there will be a hearing before the Board of Supervisors to adopt the changes to the rules of procedure. So I wanted to let you know that I am a member of the Ag Preserve Review Committee. It's made up of several different bodies, and I will do my best to, and we have other members of the committee here as well, and I'll do my best to explain their motivation for certain changes if you should need it. But other than that, I would turn it over to Terry Waller senior planner and the program administrator to discuss the amendments in a little more detail for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Terry Waller, planning staff. Just as a review, I'd like to mention that the Williamson Act is the county's primary conservation program for protecting agricultural land, that the rules of procedure guide the local administration of the program, and they implement the state's Williamson Act. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee, or APRC as they're commonly referred to, is the Board of Supervisors appointed committee, and it has a broad-based representation. The APRC's primary role is to review applications for new agricultural preserves and amendments, that is, deal with the applications themselves, but they also assess the effectiveness of the program and make recommendations for revisions to the rules of procedure, which is the case today. The program has a big impact on the conservation of agricultural land in our county, as I think most people are aware. However, it's interesting to note that almost 40% of the total county land area is under the Williamson Act or Farmland Security Zone contract. And this amounts to about 825,000 acres of county land. The primary motivation for these amendments came about, as Warren mentioned, in a long process of discussion. Really, during the annual review of the applications at APRC, issues of interpretation, program effectiveness, compliance monitoring are discussed on a routine basis, as well as legislative changes that need to be reviewed from year to year. So the proposed amendments that are before you today are really an outgrowth of these discussions at the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee. Now, just to give you a brief overview of the proposed changes, the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee is recommending changes to several sections of the Rules of Procedure document itself, but they're also making recommendations for minor revisions to the land use ordinances, both coastal zone land use ordinance and inland. The first that I'd like to go over with you are oops, I got ahead of myself here. Are that the text changes to the document, which include a simplified method of creating farmland security zones, requirement to include all of a parcel within a contract so that there are no exclusions of land that won't be in a contract for other uses that might be acceptable or compatible with the Williamson Act program, and then also several language clarifications. There's also a proposed amendments to Table 1. This is probably the newest thing that we've been working on this year. This also proposes a new category of agricultural preserve for land with high productivity prime soil. The gross acreage for this would be 20 acres, and a requirement that 10 acres must be in either Class 1 or Class 2 soil and have a higher crop productivity and valuation. Table 2 changes include the addition of non-soil dependent nurseries, as well as allowing livestock auctions as a type of specialized animal facility. So those were the additions that were being proposed, and now for the deletions that were being proposed. Small-scale manufacturing, stone farm support quarters should be the guideline for establishing any other additional residences on Williamson Act property. This would be based essentially on the intensity of the agricultural use. Again, vineyards would be able to have, which are more labor intensive, would be able to have more residential density for farm support quarters, and grazing land, which is less intensive in its labor force, would have fewer. As I mentioned earlier, there are minor revisions to the ordinances, and the basic intent is to sync up the land use ordinances sections that deal with allowable uses with the Rules of Procedure Table 2, which provides for compatible uses within the Williamson Act. This would be very helpful in the administration of the program, help the folks at the front counter and the general public using the ordinance as well as the planners, cross-referencing those sections to the Rules of Procedure for Williamson Act contracted property. It also would allow for an update of allowed land uses relative to recent legislative changes. As Warren mentioned, this summer we did a broad-based outreach as requested by the Board of Supervisors, and one of the places that we went to do a presentation was the Agricultural Liaison Advisory Board, and they came back with some recommendations for your Planning Commission and the Board to consider. And the primary, or the highlights of that, are really the restoration of some of the compatible uses that were being proposed for deletion, and building sites in coastal zone per the existing coastal zone land use ordinance. There's already a section that governs placement of residences on prime land property, and they felt that the coastal zone land use ordinance language was sufficient in addressing that concern. With that, I'll move on to the recommendation, and that is to receive the staff report, to take public testimony, discuss related issues, and make recommendations on the amendments and the environmental determination. That concludes my presentation, but I'd be happy to answer your questions as best I'm able.
Questions of Mr. Waller?
Sure, I had one, and I want to congratulate the Environmental Division. I found that their table, which starts on page 431, Rules of Procedure Amendment Summary Table, was excellent, and that really helped me to understand it, and I think they did a good job. That was in their project description. Well done there. So now that I've congratulated, now one of them that I could find there, but I couldn't find anywhere else, is you're saying this 40 acres down to 20. Where's that exact text change? You say it's to table 1. I couldn't find table 1. I found table 2, obviously with a lot of changes to it.
Well, actually, they're all text changes. That happens to be in both places. Would need to be in the text as well as table 1. And I apologize if it isn't referenced as clearly as it might have been. It was the most recent thing that we were actually working on. And perhaps Warren has some additional comments.
Because I know the Farm Bureau say they're supporting it. And I said, okay, where is the darn thing?
Yeah, it's in there, but it isn't exactly in every place that I'd like it to be. And I just discovered that myself before you mentioned it, Mr. Rose. Again, Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. It is discussed in the staff report on pages 4-6 through 4-9 or 4-8 in detail, as well as on pages 432, which is in the negative declaration with specific language, and it's been noticed. It should have been added to Exhibit A. The text changes.
And okay, I thought I was missing a page or something.
And I don't think it's a problem procedurally, but what we will do is, if your commission chooses to recommend it, we will add it to the Exhibit A that goes on to the board for their hearing. It is discussed in detail. It is mentioned. It is disclosed to the public.
Right, it is discussed.
In all the public documents. It's just that it seemed to have slipped by both Terry and myself that we didn't put it in Exhibit A, and we should have. So when you make your motion, we will ask you to include that in your motion as part of Exhibit A.
Okay, and then my next question is about this residential density thing, and I have... The Farm Bureau has a...
Over 20 acres. And in those instances, conceivably, although it hasn't been a large problem in our county, it has been a large problem elsewhere, you could end up with what amounts to rural residential housing developments on Williamson Act property. And, of course, as we all know, the intent of the Williamson Act is to help protect farmland, not result in unrelated and excessive development of farmland. And that's what, in fact, has happened in other parts of the county. And we've had some recent legislation at the state level to address that and some other abuses of the Williamson Act program. And the way we see this operating is, is basically clarifying that the contract on Williamson Act property is the guiding force, as opposed to the underlying ordinance-based provision, which allows for two residences per parcel. So we're separating, we're clarifying that it's for Williamson Act property, it's on a per contract basis, not on a per parcel basis. And what that should do is protect both the landowner and the county from any potential structural breach of contract, which could occur, could result in fines, and create a number of problems for our program. So if we go ahead and clarify that with these revisions, we would still allow, as it's currently proposed, for residential density that's warranted based on the amount of agricultural activity on the property, that is the intensity of the agricultural property, based on farm support quarters, which is already in our land use ordinance, and it makes sense to use that criteria that we're already used to using. I hope that answered your question.
I'd like to add on to that if I can. Again, Warren Hogue. What the review committee is suggesting is that, as Terry mentioned, that the minimum parcel size for the contract be the basis for determining residential density, as opposed to defaulting to the land use ordinance saying it's based on parcels more than 20 acres. The problem is that you could have multiple legal existing parcels over 20 acres within a contract that are far lower than the minimum contract size.
And my guess is we have far more of them than we don't.
Yes.
The parcels are bigger than the minimum contract size? Or
no, smaller.
Smaller.
For instance, you could have an 80-acre parcel with an 80-acre minimum parcel size that's made up of four 20-acre legal parcels.
And under that distinct...
Under the life of the contract, you couldn't sell them off separately, but because our rules are silent as to how many houses you can build, it defaults to the land use ordinance, and you could theoretically come in and ask for two building permits for two primary dwellings per house or per parcel. You could have eight houses on the 80 acres. And in our conversations with the State Department of Conservation, including a workshop that was held here in town just very recently, they indicated that that number of houses would not be logically in direct support of the agricultural activity and that they would view it as a potential breach of contract. So our position is use the minimum contract size, and then for houses beyond the first one, qualify them as farm support quarters under our ordinance because that ties the house to the agricultural activity. One per 20 acres for irrigated vineyard, one per 320 acres of grazing land. The Farm Bureau's letter says, there, if I'm reading it correctly, and I don't have it in front of me right now because we didn't get enough copies, but I read it quickly during the break, it basically says they're okay with using the minimum contract size as the basis for density, but they don't want to use, for going beyond the first house, as long as it's still, you know, for instance, if you have a 320-acre minimum parcel size and you have a 640-acre parcel, you could qualify for two houses using the 320, and they don't want to qualify the second house based on farm support. They would rather just, if your minimum contract size works out to allow you, on, based on your larger property, to have more houses, they don't want to use the farm support criteria in the ordinance to do that. I don't think that that's a major impact, but it could have a limiting factor on someone's ability to have farm support quarters, maybe more than one extra one. For instance, this example I gave you, a 640-acre parcel with a 320-acre contract, if all they got was one per minimum contract size, they would get two houses. But under the proposal as we've written it, you get the first house, and then you could have two houses as farm support quarters, so you could have a total of three because the ordinance allows you to have one per 320 acres of grazing land. So I don't think it's a major change that they want to do, but that's my interpretation of what I think their motive
was, and it works well for 5 years, but then they get a real good job somewhere else, and you see what I'm saying, where I'm going with this?
I guess.
I totally see it, and what we're trying to do is walk the tightrope between allowing flexibility for family situations in true farming families circumstances against, you know, what the change in state law brought about and the advice that we're getting for the Department of Conservation. And I would say that as long as it can be reasonably established that the second residence is used by someone who has some connection to the agricultural activity on site, that we're not going to consider it a violation. And we're not likely to have the ability to really track all these changes if there are such changes, where our point of contact is when they first come in for the building permit, and then we can review the situation. And for farm support quarters, the ordinance does require they enter into an agreement that runs with the land that shows that the farm support quarters is used that way. And that would be the approach that we can use that says, you know, we conscientiously tried to make sure there was a connection to this house and the land. And the provisions of the Williamson Act that establish breaches of penalties for residential uses over a certain total square footage only apply to houses that were built after January 1st, 2004. So you wouldn't get into the situation for houses that existed prior to that. It would only be for new houses that are built. So I don't know if that totally allays your concern. I don't think there is one perfect answer. We're trying to chart a path to solve several different circumstances without causing and still try to allow some reasonable flexibility for the farmer.
Okay. I got one last question, then I'll be quiet because I've got other commissioners.
While we're on that, though, I think, so is that a similar answer then to the question, I mean, you have the changing circumstance, the family changing circumstance, and also the circumstance of changing crop, where you might have a more intense crop that qualifies for more support quarters and then possibly less intense, where some of those previously allowed support quarters wouldn't maybe be allowed? I think that's a similar kind of changing circumstance where you could have some units that are allowed and then suddenly with the changing agricultural use not.
Now, that's in the land use ordinance now. You know, we have this process and we're not changing that for the Ag Preserve program in the rules. And it's a question of monitoring and enforcement. And typically, if someone qualifies for more houses based on an intensive agricultural use, like, for instance, irrigated vineyards, those aren't going to typically go away overnight. But if they do, and the basis for which the number of houses they qualified for were derived from that crop, and because they have also entered into an agreement that is with the county that's recorded, it could provide us a basis for telling them that they have to do something to bring their farm support quarters into compliance, which could be as extreme as removing it, which isn't maybe quite as onerous as it might sound because a lot of times these are mobile homes. But we try to work with the agriculturalists. We try to avoid these situations. And I don't think it's going to be that probable that someone's going to downsize the intensity of their agricultural endeavor that severely that it would probably cause us to have to tell them to take out a farm support quarters. But we have the ability to do that through our normal enforcement.
Okay.
I've got while we're talking about this, Mr. Hoga, where do secondary dwellings or granny units, do they fit in this picture at all?
They're not actually allowed uses in the agricultural category, period, let alone in the rules of procedure. The basis, there's a section in the land use ordinance, residential uses in the agricultural category, and it basically says you get two primary dwellings per parcel that's over 20 acres, and for parcels between 1 acre and 20 acres, you get an additional, you get a residence at, as long as it qualifies under the design standards of the secondary dwelling ordinance. So it's not technically a secondary dwelling. It's technically a primary dwelling that is subject to the square footage limits and the distance from the main residence limits of secondary dwellings, but it's not technically a secondary dwelling.
But it is.
Less than 20 acres, but at least 1 acre, your second house can again be on the property, but it's subject to the size limitations, and I don't have the ordinance section in front of me. I'm assuming it's also subject to the proximity requirements of secondary dwellings. So it would have to be, you know, depending on the property size, within 50, 250, or 500 feet of the
right
house.
So it could be handled as a secondary dwelling if the owner wanted to do it that way.
It's handled in the same way because the secondary dwelling design standards are referenced. It doesn't actually become a secondary dwelling, but they could ask for a minor use permit to waive those standards if it wasn't reasonable to be 50, 250, or 500 feet from the main house.
Because the problem is if you need to move it away and create a new building site and everything, then you create problems with the agriculture use next to a house, and if you can put it close to an existing house, then at least all you're doing is enlarging that one building site.
And I think that's the intent of the requirement.
Okay. Commissioner Rose, did you have another question?
Right. And Warren alluded to it. And when this was, I mentioned that we were going to do this at the last Templeton Advisory Group meeting, and they asked me a question, which I failed on miserably. But fortunately, there was a farmer there that was able to help out. And this is what we bring in these new rules today. How does this affect the people that already have existing after 1969 contracts? Because I understand, at least, that we change the rules, they apply. So somebody's got two dwellings and their kid lives in one of them on a separate parcel, or maybe part of the second dwelling, but he's got absolutely nothing to do with the farming operation. He just lives there. Or maybe they rent it out.
It is true that the contracts have a provision in them that say that the properties that are subject to the contracts are subject to changes in the rules of procedure as they may be made from time to time in the future. However, this issue of the housing density changes, again, the Williamson Act change that we've alluded to as the Laird Bill only applies to houses that were constructed after January 1st, 2004. So clearly anything that existed prior to that date would not be affected. We would also exercise judgment as to whether we feel that there is a potential breach of contract that requires going to the board for some form of enforcement action. Typically, that enforcement action for contracts is for the county to file a county-initiated notice of non-renewal, which would terminate their contract in 10 years. Their taxes would gradually go up during that 10 years. But to be honest with you, we only take the most severe cases where substandard legal parcels below the minimum contract size have been sold off separately is typically what we focus on for taking to the board.
Okay. I heard you say that the Laird Bill allowed the existing homes prior to 2004.
It just said that it doesn't affect houses that existed prior to January 1st, 2004.
But I didn't see our changes make that distinction. And I know you're saying that you're not going to go after somebody, but I don't think we ought to be making a rule that says somebody who abided by the rules of that day, that now, tomorrow, we're going to change that rule and make them not compliant, but that's okay. We're not going to chase you down anyway, unless you're really egregious about it.
Under the land use ordinance, they would be considered a pre-existing non-conforming use. Under the Ag Preserve program that the county administers, we would consider them to to basically be not an issue requiring enforcement, contract enforcement.
I believe County Council wants to comment on this.
Well, I just wanted to add that the one of the purpose of these amendments is to address the requirements of the Laird bill and not have the county be authorizing construction of second units that may bring somebody into a material breach of contract under the new state law. And I also wanted to add that the old contracts that we've got, most of the ones that I've reviewed, talk about they're subject to the rules in effect at the date they're entered into and any amendments that may take place in the future. And they refer to amendments to the zoning regulations as well as the ag preserve rules. So they're, when they enter into these contracts, there is some idea that the rules may change over time.
I might note it may not be as direct as some may like it, but on page 421 of your staff report.
It's the Laird Bill, AB 1492. Did I miss it in here?
It's in the exhibits. There's specific language change. It'll take me a second to find it for you.
While Terry's doing that, I think the approach that we took in the staff report was we only showed you the changes, and there's discussion of what the Farmland Security Zone program is in the rules of procedure that we're not changing.
I guess that's what I said,
in this book.
For my benefit, could you just briefly summarize exactly what the Farm Security Zone is and what it replaces or doesn't replace, and what the general provisions are for AB 1492?
Yes, we can certainly do that between...
Maybe if others are totally clear.
I'm not totally clear on it. At first, I thought it had something to do with Homeland Security and stuff like that.
Well, I thought maybe it was an overlay zone. And again, you may be dealing with a commission that isn't as familiar with this.
Okay. What I'll do is I'll get started telling you what the Farmland Security Zones are and where they came from.
Just very briefly, I think.
And then Terry might want to just make sure I didn't miss anything. There was a Senate Bill 1182 that was enacted in 1998, which basically established what's known as a Super Williamson Act contract. And this is for land, the more productive land that's shown on the state mapping program as prime farmland, farmland of statewide significance, unique farmland, and farmland of local importance. It's basically irrigated and dry farmed property that someone could enter into this farmland security zone, and it gives them extra protections. It gives them a guaranteed 35% property value, property tax valuation, 35% reduction in their property tax valuation, instead of just whatever the, as the Williamson Act currently values property, is the what the assessor determines the value of the agricultural products produced are. So it would guarantee them a 35% property tax valuation reduction. It would also give them more protections against forced annexation into cities or special districts. It would not allow school districts to acquire their property. And in return, they require a minimum 20-year term. So there's no 10-year term possible under a farmland security zone. So you had one today on your consent agenda for Wolf Vineyards, and some property, it's been used some in this county. I think it'll be used more. It's a voluntary program where someone just decides they want to have more protection, more guarantees than a normal ag preserve contract, and in return get a better tax break and have some protections against being included in improvement districts and assessed for services they don't need.
And there is a definition as to what type and size, or I guess, of properties that must need to exist in order to be a farmland security zone.
Yes, and I can run those down for you real quick.
No, that's okay. As long as I understand that it's a kind of above and beyond, and by being above and beyond, you get additional property tax relief.
This is the better land that we're talking about.
Right. Okay, is that clear to everybody?
And the minimum parcel size now on this better land is
40 acres. I mean, that's what we're discussing in the changes.
It's basically the same as Table 1 for regular contracts now. To be eligible for a farmland security zone, you can come in with as little as 10 acres as long as it's all Class 1 and it's all irrigated.
And it's mapped.
Crops. And it meets one of these mapping designations, prime farmland, farmland of statewide significance, et cetera. But once you're in, then you're subject to a 40-acre minimum parcel size for the purpose of selling the property or conveying it or subdividing it. So,
you're
so
in at 10, but you have to but to go out or change.
Yeah.
40.
This has been part of our program for over 20 years, or about 20 years, that as an incentive to get the better prime land in, we'll let you in at a smaller size, but once you're in, your ability to sell your legal parcels or to subdivide your property is at a higher level. And the minimum parcel sizes for farmland security zones under those circumstances are the same as for regular ag preserve.
So you'd have to go into a 10-year phasing out before you could go back to individual parcels.
Yes, except that it's a 20-year minimum term. So you're in for 20 years no matter what.
Okay, it's but 10, at the point 10 acres, 20 years, and so it's a 20-year.
Mm-hmm.
I got it, I think.
So let's say in your...
I think our county council's over there reading the bill. But could we just summarize why it came into existence and how it affects what we're doing?
Would you like me to answer, Warren?
Go ahead.
Okay. And I'm sure he may have additional comments. Basically, this came about because of abuses in other parts of the state. And things as egregious as a Gottschalk's was built on Williamson Act property. There were very small parcels that had very limited or no agricultural activity on them that were under Williamson Act properties. And they had elaborate residential development. They were essentially rural residential retreats in some cases. A number of abuses like this. I think there was also a go-kart track or motocross track on Williamson Act property with no agricultural value. And the state became concerned about it because, of course, they provide subvention monies to the counties, and this becomes an issue in the budget at the state level, as we all know. So they wanted to make sure that the current standards, that is the three principles of compatibility, essentially assure that all land uses on Williamson Act contracted properties are in support of or incidental to the agricultural activity. And they wanted to make sure that those principles were being followed, and they instituted this legislative change to make sure that these abuses were curtailed, that people fully understand that the state was serious about it because there are financial penalties on property owners for the structures that are, in fact, these breaches. So it's not just a matter of being pulled out of the Williamson Act contract through a county-initiated non-renewal, which takes some time, but it's actually a financial penalty that conceivably property owners in this county could have to endure if they're in breach of contract. So much of the motivation was to fully protect the Williamson Act so that it didn't jeopardize the Act, so that it remained consistent with its purpose, and also to clarify the administration at the local level. The State Department of Conservation provided several training sessions throughout the state. And subsequent to those training sessions, there's been updates and additional information provided on their website. And essentially what it's designed to do is curtail the abuses and make sure that the purpose of the Williamson Act is followed, which is to protect commercial agriculture and not create or allow the creation of a bunch of extraneous development that has no bearing or relationship to the agricultural productivity of the property. I hope that gives you some background.
And those actually existed, but there wasn't a lot of teeth because there were not financial penalties. Is that?
I think what the state was seeing, if I may be permitted to speculate a little bit, is not a uniform application of the three principles of compatibility. My personal reflection is that this county has a pretty strong program. And it's perhaps some other counties where there isn't as much administrative oversight of the program, and that's where those abuses occurred. So,
and at our conference, We saw some egregious examples that are ongoing today. They showed us in a county, it was a several hundred acre parcel. They were going to divide it up into 20 acre parcels, and they were all going to have an interest in the ag operation, but it was clearly a rural residential ranchette thing. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
Ongoing, proposed today, Lard Bill still in.
Thank you. Are there other questions of staff on this item? Thank you for the clarification, too. Seeing none, we will open this to the public. I do have one speaker slip from Jackie Crabb.
Madam Chair, as the speaker is approaching the podium, I'd like to note that we do have at least one member of the Ag Preserve Review Committee here. That's Linda Kennecke on behalf of the Ag Commissioner's Office. I'm sure she'd like the opportunity to address your commission at the appropriate time.
Oh, certainly. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please. And if you are representing the Farm Bureau.
Yes, Jackie Crabb, San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau. The San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau generally supports the proposed amendments to the San Luis Obispo County Rules of Procedure to implement the California Land Conservation Act of 1965 and appreciates the work of the Ag Preserve Review Committee and the planning staff in addressing recent trends, issues, and change in legislation. San Luis Obispo County has one of the strongest Williamson Act programs in the state, and we want to continue to maintain its credibility. Keeping with the intent of the Act, we have identified some amendment items for your consideration. One, we support the reduction of the minimum preserve for specialized farming from 40 to 20 acres. Regarding residential density, Farm Bureau recommends that the residential density be based only on the proposed contract minimum parcel size, not to also include land use ordinance section, be interpreted as part of stone and cut stone products. Therefore, we suggest including a footnote that clarifies this does not affect gravel pits or rock quarries. And finally, eating, drinking places, and rural recreation and camping. Farm Bureau suggests that these categories be treated the same as temporary events and bed and breakfast, since these categories are also part of the Ag Tourism Ordinance discussion that we are having today. So thank you for your time.
Ms. Crabb, I have a question. I didn't understand your residential density point, your second point there. Maybe you could say it another way.
I'll give it my best shot. Joy Fitzhugh is the analyst who's put all this work together, and she's on day one of her vacation. But my understanding is that we already are going to agree to the residential density based on the contract minimum parcel size. And we saw that using criteria based on ag type and acreage would cause some problems. However, in listening to the dialogue here, the understanding is if you want to go beyond the minimum residential density to use some sort of criteria that doesn't have such problems attached to it, even though I know it is in the land use ordinance. And so planning could possibly address that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. The second speaker slip I have is from Sue Luft. And these are the only two speaker slips that I have. So anyone else wanting to address us, let us know.
Hi, my name is Sue Luft. My husband and I own a vineyard east of Templeton, and I'm speaking on behalf of North County Watch today. North County Watch supports the Ag Preserve Review Committee's recommended revisions to the rules of procedure. The Ag Preserve Review Committee thoroughly reviewed and considered all the issues involved, and we'd like you to keep in mind that the community advisory councils didn't have all of the background on that, so keep in mind they did not have the chance to do that kind of thorough review. The amendments to the rules of procedure are necessary to bring the local rules into better compliance with the recent legislative changes, including the Laird Bureau. These revisions will safeguard our farmers and ranchers from penalties under the Williamson Act. They will preserve the integrity of the Williamson Act so the public will continue to support the program. North County Watch supports the Williamson Act as a tool to ensure the preservation of agricultural land, and we ask that your commission recommend approval of the amendments as recommended by the Ag Preserve Review Committee. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission? We will close the public hearing and bring it back to the commission. Are there other staff members who wish to address the commission?
Linda Kennecke, County Ag Department. Our department certainly supports the proposed changes. It helps improve the integrity of the program locally. And I just have two brief comments. We had some discussion about specialized animal facilities, and the Department of Conservation has expressed concern with equestrian facilities in particular being on contracted land. During our discussions, it was made very clear that at the local level, we would like to continue having these equestrian facilities. And the recommendation that I would like to make is that footnote 4, which is the applications for land use permits are subject to prior review and recommendation by the review committee, be applied to the specialized animal facilities when proposals are made for the riding academies, equestrian exhibition facilities, and large-scale ranches. It really comes down to it. During the discussions, it came down to the fact that it was a size scale issue, and I think this would give the committee the opportunity to chime in on that, because we have had a few proposals come forward that probably don't meet that size scale intent, and it would be nice to get their input.
So your
question, Mr. Rose?
Let me understand your position. You're saying that, well, I'm thinking the what about the Cardiff stud farms? You know, now, is that operation okay? I know they raise animals. And
that's something that's currently under non-renewal as it is.
But just that one, for example, because I'm familiar with it. And they raise, you know, foals, mm-hmm. and then they have a track, so I guess they train them, and then they sell them off to somebody. Is that kind of operation okay?
I think that would be one of the perfect examples of what could go to the review committee, to see if, in fact, it is okay, the size scale relative to the entire site. Previously, because it was a breeding horse facility, it had been considered to be a compatible use. Subsequent to that, and I'm not even sure when that was originally established, Department of Conservation has made it very clear that that type of facility is not agriculturally related. Its horses are no longer considered an agricultural commodity. And so those type of facilities are in question. And that's academies and the other equestrian facilities I mentioned, if those could be subject to review by the APRC.
So you want to add it to 6?
Right. Just that portion of 6 that's related to equestrian facilities.
Okay.
Again, the committee recommended that they remain on the compatible use or allowed use chart, and our discussions revolved around size scale, and from a staff level, it would be greatly appreciated to have their input, and it would also alert applicants that there is additional review, that they don't just automatically are not automatically considered a compatible use.
But it sounds to me, if somebody proposed one of those breeding things today, you wouldn't approve it.
It probably comes down to a size scale. Certainly the facility you're referring to, I don't think that would be considered a compatible use, but it would, and that would be the Ag Department's position, but it would be subject to review by the committee. If it was something that, you know, was an acre in size on a multi-hundred acre parcel, there could be a different outcome. But if it's the primary use on that, it's not secondary then to an agricultural use. And again, horses are not considered agriculture.
And often in these kinds of operations, there is a large quantity, or can be a large quantity, of irrigated pasture or irrigated field crop, you know, that produces alfalfa or something like that. And that's a factor that the Ag Preserve Review Committee could take into effect. But I think what it really boils down to is how much of the productive ag land is going to be used for the equestrian or horse-oriented use versus the rest of the land available for agricultural production.
And I think, more importantly, what we'd I haven't in recent times seen a proposal for something that you're referring to, but what is more common are commercial recreational facilities that I think the most recent one was a dressage facility that occupied the majority of the site. And so that was one that certainly led to questions. So it's more of a recreational commercial aspect without having an ongoing ag use. So
a simple recommendation there. And then on 4-65 of the staff report, which is footnote 7, there we're identifying where the airfields and landing strips are appropriate. And a question of marketing should be allowed. That leaves something very wide open. It seems that these days we can associate just about anything with marketing. But regardless, if that does or does not stay in, where I recommend that be removed. Again, this is something I was wondering if we could add the footnote note 4, because, again, it comes down to perhaps a size scale determination. And this way the review committee could chime in on that.
So what you're suggesting in the table is that, just now that it's finally dawning on me exactly what you're requesting, is that we add footnote 4 to two areas identified Correct. In the tables.
Yes.
Correct.
Oh, my and goodness. Okay.
So it's on specialized animal facilities, and it would most likely need to be in the chart a 4 by specialized animal facilities, articulating that it's only applying to the equestrian portion of that, because the specialized animal facility is quite long, and then just on airstrips, refer it to footnote 4 as well.
Are you speaking of airstrips, or are you speaking of marketing and management?
It's the airstrip item in the chart, which is also footnote 7, and I would actually recommend moving the marketing or management and just leave the rest of the sentence there.
Deleting, your recommendation is deleting
the
marketing or management of agricultural products?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And leave it to the agricultural, in support of the agricultural enterprise on site, either for crops, grain, transporting, and it could be for, or the production of agricultural products.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Any question? Any other questions?
I'm confused here. You just referred us to page 465, which is table 2, but I also got table 2 over on the 4, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Maybe staff could help me out. I see the ones at the table 2 that starts on 460 is changes recommended by the Ag Liaison Advisory Board on 813. What's
there's two table 2s.
There are two.
Commissioner
sorry
Reese.
About
which
that.
One matters?
I was using the one in the ND. I was using the wrong one.
But one
the,
is,
the,
is.
The changes are the same, I believe.
The changes are the same.
The one on, in the 460 range.
That's coastal.
The table 2 that is in the back that starts on 460, those additional changes to table 2 that the Ag Liaison Advisory Board discussed with me at one of their meetings that they would like to see and that I said I would carry forward. The actual Ag Preserve Review recommendations for table...
Those could qualify. And so I'm just concerned... can someone help assure me that allowing the smaller parcels to qualify then for these protections won't increase sort of subdivision or residential potential? I'm still a little bit confused by how that can work. And so that's certainly a concern that these smaller parcels wouldn't actually increase residential potential.
Linda gestured to me, so I'll answer that. These smaller parcels, when they come in essence, are frozen.
Frozen.
In their sizes. And they wouldn't be able to subdivide any further. They wouldn't be able to be sold off as 10-acre parcels.
That's what you talked about before. They could come
Correct.
At 10 but had to go out at
Correct.
40.
And we're not proposing any changes to that particular part of the program. It's in Table 1. It's the minimum parcel sizes for eligibility, which is coming into the program. And then subsequent subdivision or conveyance or sale. And there was a proposal, it came up several years ago and it came up again last year to merge the two columns of the table so that when you came into the program you were subject to the same higher minimum parcel size as for subdivision or sale. And that was taken to the board. That had a didn't have a unanimous Ag Preserve Review Committee recommendation, and it was taken to the board for authorization, and they chose not to authorize those amendments for processing. So the system that we have in place now will remain. That's not subject to these amendments today. that you can still come in at a smaller parcel size for eligibility, but then you're in essence frozen and you can't be sold off separately unless you comply with the higher minimum parcel size for sale or subdivision. Does that clarify that for you?
Okay, so just in the nutshell then, the smaller parcel allowance then for the Williamson qualifying purpose wouldn't result in a possibly higher number of residences being allowed than the current allowance?
No. Okay. And keep in mind, these smaller parcels are the most productive activities on the most capable soils.
There's criteria established. Yeah.
You know, this is the best stuff. This is the row crops in the Cienega Valley and the Oso Flacco area that can come in, but then they still can't be sold
separately.
Separately.
Okay. That's the
and they would, you know, and they would still be able to have the one house that they do now.
And so, how many parcels are actually in this category? I see the mention of few, but is there some guess or calculation of how many parcels or how many applicants you've seen wanting so they can qualify?
Okay,
what the effect would be?
You're now talking about the proposal to change the minimum size for prime land preserves from 40 acres down to 20 acres for the organic farmers and the direct marketers. And I'll toss it to Terry because I don't know if we have hard numbers. It's a handful.
We do not have hard numbers. Terry Waller, planning staff again. but these will primarily be focused in the coastal regions of the county, probably, or thereabouts, in the very productive alluvial areas. That's where we see most of the prime class 1, class 2 soil, and the smaller lot sizes as a rule. We don't see quite so many of these in, say, east of Highway 101, so I don't think you'll be seeing very many of them in that area. Yeah, I do not have a clear sense of how many of these are out there, but we, you know, in my just fielding questions in the daily course of business over the years, I don't get a lot of requests for that particular parcel size, but we get a few. So I
might add that one property we know of that kind of prompted this discussion is the Broadhurst property up in your part of the county. And then there was another example I could think of, Windrose Farm in East County, although they're now in the program, but they're an example of the kind of value-added agricultural production that would probably justify coming in, if they're not lucky enough to be adjacent to another preserve that they can add on to come in at the 20-acre preserve size.
I'm told that 10 acres is about what a mom-and-pop person operation could do for a vineyard, and I'm told there's a few in Creston. I don't know whether an ag preserve or not, but
well, keep in mind that this is the preserve size. This isn't the individual property eligibility size, and you could be eligible at 10 acres, but the way our rules are now for a prime land preserve, you have to be either have to create your own or join an existing preserve that's at least 40 acres in size, and it has to be contiguous. So you have to touch it.
A larger one might be as
so
much as two.
They aren't offered the protection of the Williamson Act.
Structures of any kind are outside of the reduced property tax valuation.
That's what I thought. Now, we have a request that somehow these other, quote, activities which help to, from the Farm Bureau, the requests that the activities that sort of, quote, keep the farmer in business, how are those, how would those also not receive favorable, what do they do now?
to the extent that they involve structures, the structures themselves would be excluded, so they wouldn't be part of the Williamson Act, essentially, that valuation. It's land only. The activities that are on that land are a little bit more difficult. I'm not entirely sure how that would be assessed, but I doubt that it would have a big impact on it.
If I might help with this one, I think that, and we have the Farm Bureau rep here, so I don't mean to put words in their mouth, but I think their comment that you just quoted is in relation to the changes they wanted to table to not remove some of the additional compatible uses like small-scale manufacturing.
Oh, I understand that. And the reason I was trying to ascertain unless it's a building, it is going to receive favorable tax advantages, even though it's an income-producing, non-agricultural-related activity.
It's not just the buildings. It's the land underneath the buildings, too. The assessor will draw
a
yard area around a house. And then if someone, for instance, has a quarry, they won't get the reduced, you know, on a portion of their property, they won't get a reduced property tax valuation for that either. It's the land that is available for agricultural production.
So why are we...
No, I'm just trying to understand. Their request is to allow this, and I guess that the reason for my questioning is that this is an income-producing activity unrelated to ag activities.
A supplemental income for the farmer.
Correct. And the request is that that be allowed within the...
As a compatible use by our rules of procedure.
And this, the... whatever their acronym is, and staff and everybody is recommending that that not be the case.
Well, the Ag Preserve Review Committee recommended that small-scale manufacturing and stone and cut stone products not be allowed, period, anymore. And the Ag Liaison Advisory Board, of which Farm Bureau is actually a member of both groups, the Ag Liaison Advisory Board said, well, because of this same issue, its potential supplemental income for the farmer, rather than just outright prohibiting small-scale manufacturing stone-cut stone products, why don't we use that footnote 4 that says land use permits for these proposals are subject to Ag Preserve Review Committee review and recommendations. And I told the Ag Liaison Advisory Board that as a staff member and as one person on a 12-member Ag Preserve Review Committee, I felt like that was a reasonable compromise, and I shared that with the Ag Preserve Review Committee, that conversation. They didn't formally vote to endorse the Ag Liaison Advisory Board recommendation on those two issues, mainly because it was discussed on an agenda that where it wasn't listed as an action item. So,
how prevalent is this?
Not very. The thing about small-scale manufacturing is you have to go to the land use ordinance to see how it's defined as a special use and how it's limited in the agricultural category. And basically, all you can do for small-scale manufacturing is directly related to agricultural implements. It's like horseshoeing and ag fencing and things like that. And the Ag Liaison Advisory Board felt that with those ordinance limitations, we should at least let the Ag Preserve Review Committee look at each and every one of these.
I understand.
So that's the significance of changing the table that's in the back, or changing the table that's in the front to match what the Ag Liaison Advisory Board recommended in the back. And again, if your commission is interested in these things, when you get to the point of making a motion, we'll help you with the exact wording.
And staff's comments on the stone and cut stone products? And the suggestion that it's not really refined cutting and all that, it's more sizing. Do you have a comment, or is the original recommendation still the original recommendation?
Well, we got to see this letter about two seconds.
Oh, you can just say no comment, too, I suppose.
Well, I can give you an opinion. That's... if you'd like that. Terry and I really haven't discussed it, nor have I discussed it with counsel, but I feel that stone and cut stone products as they're defined in the land use ordinance is really more manufacture. It's like tombstones and so on. And what their letter is talking about is rough sizing of quarried stone. It's not on products.
Right, and that's on page 417.
Yes.
Okay, and may I understand, just to make this really clear for me, this type of use would have to be incidental to the agricultural activities within the contract.
Correct.
Okay. Phew.
So,
I'm sorry if I confused
that. It's okay.
Maybe now is not the right time to bring it up, but I'll do it anyway.
Oh, yeah, well.
You can shush me. I got a letter from somebody who was concerned about this, and reading the Farm Bureau's letter, it looks like you have told them that these small rock quarries are okay, But this citizen was wanted to make sure that they were okay, and he read the stuff, and he didn't think they were okay, and he wanted to make sure that they were. So it seems appropriate to follow the...
if you look on, and I'm going to use the right table, if you look on page 418, and you go down to resource extraction in the middle, and you go down to the third line, mining, that's what the quarries come under, you'll see, and there's no change proposed, this is the way it is now, that in inland area and non-prime coastal zone, it's note 4, which is not a prohibition. Note 4 is applications for land use permits are subject to prior review and recommendations by the review committee. And in fact, we had a surface mine come to the committee last year that was very controversial. A lot of neighbors came out and talked about it, and the review committee felt that that particular quarry was not appropriate and recommended that it not be allowed. I don't know if that land use... I don't think that land use permit has actually come to your commission yet. That's yet to come. I think it's still in exhaustive environmental review. But in the past, surface mines have been allowed on contracted land. We've had a conversation in the past with the Department of Conservation about mining in the Williamson Act, and there are some special provisions in the Williamson Act to allow mining, but what the Department of Conservation said in the workshop that we attended a couple of weeks ago is that it's, again, a question of size and scale. I mean, if it's the entirety of the property under contract that's being mined, then they're not so sure about that. But if it's a portion of the property and it's phased and there's site restoration to the point of restoring agricultural capability, then they're okay with that. So I think the note 4 approach of individual case-by-case review is appropriate.
Okay, but not stone and cut stone products, because that isn't what that's about.
To me, that is taking the raw product that you've just taken out of the ground and making a finished product out of it. When you make a tombstone, you're doing a lot more to it.
That exceeds mining.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Commissioners' comments or move to action on these items?
Well, before we move on, just a couple of notes, I guess, from the Farm Bureau letter. I'm just still not quite clear on the item 2, the density suggestion. I'm not sure what they would have us do here still. So could someone help me on that? And there was just the other item 5 that we didn't address, the eating and drinking places. But let's start again with the residential density. What we've heard here from Ms. Crabb reading this, Farm Bureau recommends that the residential density be based only on the proposed contract minimum parcel size, not also the land use ordinance. So as I understand it, what we're seeing here, it's the suggestion from staff in the committees that that's indeed what we do, that it based on the contract minimum size, and then allow an additional land use ordinance-based farm support quarters allowance. So I guess I'm a bit confused, because as I would read this, the Farm Bureau would not advocate the extra support quarters allowance.
I think that's
not right.
That's not how I interpret what they said.
Okay.
I think what they're saying is that allow the people to have houses based on their minimum contract size and don't make them qualify them as farm support quarters. And Ms. Crabb can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's what they're saying. And if you wanted to accomplish that, if you agreed with that, then on page 421, at the end of the table 2 changes, footnote number 9, it would be, to accomplish that would be simply to remove the reference to the farm support quarter sections of the ordinances, which is to delete the last sentence. In most cases, it will be necessary to qualify the multiple residences as farm support quarters under section 22308.17c and e of the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance, or section 22340b and c of the Land Use Ordinance. The Williamson Act says, and the Department of Conservation has made it real clear, that the compatible uses and residential uses are certainly part of that, has to be related to the agricultural use on the site. So we can take out the sentence that deals with the farm support quarters standards of the land use ordinance, but the sentence before that says each proposed residence must be incidental to and in support of the agricultural enterprise on the property and demonstrate compliance with the principles of compatibility and the Laird Bill provisions of the Williamson Act would remain, and that's where the rubber meets the road. And I don't see where we don't get local option to change that.
I think our recommendation would be to leave the language in there, because if you take that language out, you're inviting what may be a violation of the Laird Bill.
Okay.
And keep in mind, a motivation for this language is to try and help protect the landowner from a potential unknowingly going into a potential breach of contract situation where they get penalized.
So both recommendations are to leave it then as helpful clarification then?
That's the recommendation that staff would...
That's the review committee's recommendation, and staff supports it.
Okay, then to follow up on the last one, eating and drinking places and rural recreation and camping. And I believe we had somewhere in the staff report that we're going to be taking up these temporary events later, or... And maybe there's no relationship. Some of this gets a little confusing.
Well, actually... there was a couple of areas where the review committee wanted to wait until these pending ag tourism ordinance amendments are decided on by the board. And they're related to bed and breakfast facilities and events. And how I interpret the Farm Bureau's letter is, and there's a footnote 10 that's put by those uses, and footnote 10 is on page 421. The review committee recommends that the title, organization, and allowable status of this use be reviewed for further recommendations from the committee after pending amendments to the LUO and CZLUO for the use group are adopted. So, in essence, it just leaves it the way it is now. And what Farm Bureau is recommending is that note 10 be applied to rural recreation and camping and eating and drinking places, too, to allow them to continue until the ordinance amendments that deal with that are decided. And rural recreation and camping is part of the ordinance pending ag tourism ordinance amendments, but I'm a little fuzzy, and I don't have the staff people here who working directly on those amendments, whether we're actually proposing any changes to eating and drinking places.
Well, I'm looking on page 4-16, and it says rural recreation and camping, and there is a yes that's crossed out, and then note 4, which means that given certain circumstances and additional review, it could be allowed. Am I correct?
That's the recommendation now. And I think what Farm Bureau is saying is they'd like to leave the yes and put a note 10 in next to it.
And 10 would?
That's the one that says that it'll be revisited after the board finishes the Ag Tourism Ordinance Amendments.
Right. Okay.
Are we to get consensus on this, or?
I was just trying to understand exactly what was being suggested.
And I certainly don't mean to be the mouthpiece for Farm Bureau, Ms. Crabb. If you disagree with how I'm characterizing this, please stand up and clarify that.
Yes, you can. Please come back to the podium and give your name for the record.
Jackie Crabb, Farm Bureau. As far as the dialogue that's going on right now with ag tourism, there has been a lot of discussion just with the approach on breaking it up into the different subjects. Right now we have events we're looking at, and rural recreation and camping is also the next step we'll be looking at. And so with that, knowing that that category is one that is in dialogue, I thought that, to hold off on that just as you're doing temporary events and bed and breakfasts. As far as the eating and drinking places, we found that to be pretty vague, and so we thought maybe that there is some correlation with ag tourism or could be. That is up to you to consider.
Can I just further clarify or get an understanding then? Rural recreation and camping is being discussed as part of the ag tourism ordinance. But what is being suggested here is that additional review would be necessary. So I'm not sure that I find them in conflict with each other.
Well, we thought that for the consistency, that you have, you're pulling the temporary events out and you're pulling bed and breakfasts out because of the ag tourism. And also, rural recreation is also one of those topics that we're in discussion with. So they're all three being discussed. So
and what I interpreted, and so that's one per contract, no matter how big your property is. It could be bigger than the minimum parcel size in the contract, plus then farm support quarters. What I interpreted your association's letter to say was, we would like to have the house based on the minimum parcel size in the contract, not that it's just one per contract, and that we don't want additional houses based on the farm support quarter standards, which are based on the intensity of the ag use. Right. So what that means is that if your minimum parcel size is 320 acres, then you get as many houses as you can divide your property by 320.
Right. Now, doesn't that same ordinance address if you want to increase, besides the intensity of the type of cropping, if you want more houses beyond that criteria? And I don't have that in front of me.
Well, I don't have that part of the ordinance. And again, we're not talking about the Ag Preserve Rules of Procedure. We're talking about the land use ordinance. I don't know if there is a provision in the land use ordinance that allows modification of the number of residences based on density, but I can look it up on the computer. It'll take me a while. So,
but I'm sure you are correct, though, that I think the idea was having two bases to determine the density.
And I wanted, if I may, if you're done.
I'm done.
And if the chair allows me. I need to clarify something on eating and drinking places. I just talked to Linda Kennecke, who is familiar with the Ag Tourism Ordinance amendments. It is true that rural recreation and camping is part of the package that's being looked at, the ordinance package. And it's also correct that our recommendation from the review committee is simply to change it to note 4, so it wouldn't outright exclude it. It would just say we want to look at each one. We could add note 10 to it to say, and we'll look at this as a compatible use again after the board finishes the ordinance amendments, but we could do that anyway. Where I really wanted to go was eating and drinking places. Eating and drinking places is not being reviewed as part of the Ag Tourism Ordinance Amendment package. And the review committee looked at that one very carefully, and we also consulted with the Department of Conservation in the past. And it was real clear that eating and drinking places is really not a compatible use under the Williamson Act. It doesn't meet the three principles of compatibility. It doesn't directly relate to the on-site processing of agricultural products. You know, tasting rooms for wineries are pushing it, but the Department of Conservation is okay with that. But going beyond to restaurants, to eating and drinking places, they have a real problem with that. And it was, a deliberate recommendation on the part of the Ag Preserve Review Committee to change the yes to no for eating and drinking places in Table 2. And so I, at this point, as staff, I don't feel like we can support the Farm Bureau's recommendation. We support the Ag Preserve Review Committee's recommendation on eating and drinking places.
Okay.
Okay. So, but even putting it as no, you can't have a temporary event?
Oh, you can have an event. Yeah, you can have a temporary event. We're not.
Yeah, but this is different. This is the restaurant. In fact, we had a
on
wine.
On events, I'm trying to find that on the table. Temporary events on page 417, fourth use from the top. Okay. It stays as yes with note 10, which says we'll look at it again after the board finishes the ordinance amendments.
Did I understand you to say that the rural recreation and camping might also fall under that same category because that is one that is being reviewed?
Yes, and again, Ag Preserve Review Committee is recommending that it be changed to note 4, which is the case-by-case review. But I don't think it would be a material conflict with their recommendation to add note 10 to that, too, to say it should be looked at.
I'm looking at
I'm looking at Linda, and she's giving me the nod, and we have 2/12 of the committee here. I don't think I'm overlooking anyone else's on the committee.
I'm just looking for consistency. We've sort of said that those areas which are currently under additional review will be note 10,
mm-hmm.
and that the existing designation, yes or no, will remain what it currently is with the note 10. Am I correct?
Yeah. In other words, if you add note 10, it just says it stays the way either it is now or the way that the review committee is now recommending it, and then we'll look at it again when the board finishes the ag tourism amendments.
Okay. Now, back to the – are there any more clarifications or questions, consensus building as far as Mr. Rose?
Fully amended. Linda, do you remember why we said no on homestays?
What is a homestay?
Oh.
And perhaps there's one.
Now, homestays and farmstays are two different things.
Right. It's something that currently doesn't exist.
What is
a homestay category versus farmstay?
Linda, could you come up to the microphone, please? Thank you.
You know, you're asking us a detailed question that we'd have to research.
You have to research what a homestay is?
Well, no. She asked me about farmstay.
Well, no. A homestay is what's in here and not allowed. And I guess that would be the question then, because I'm hearing farmstay would be allowed, but it's not on this list in the table. So
I have no idea what either one is.
Curious on the thinking.
Well, Linda Kennecke, County Ag Department. I think the simple way to look at it is that the transient lodging under the guise of bed and breakfast is being reviewed, and really there could be forthcoming changes if homestays is even allowed on the, or is even part of this table. Because I do believe as part of this update, this table will now, and correct me if I'm wrong, Terry, this table will now reflect what's in our ordinance. It'll now look like Table 2-2 in the ordinance. In terms of categories and language,
the whole table isn't proposed for revision.
Okay,
but it'll.
Then that was my mistake. I thought it was going to reflect what's currently.
You mean reformatted? Reformatted to look like Table 2 in the land use?
That's not proposed.
We haven't discussed it.
The transient lodging, by and large, will be reviewed as part of the bed and breakfast update, and there could be recommendations for changes for these. But as Warren said, the homestay had always been no, and I thought it was because it was no longer a part of the land use ordinance, and I could be wrong about that.
Well, it's not defined in Title 22. I'm going to go back to...
And so,
I'm sorry, is my mic on?
That's my recollection, unfortunately.
There's no definition in the land use ordinance for...
Oh, okay, but for just without having one, could you just... Is a homestay where... I have a primary residence on some type of agricultural activity, Williamson at a contract parcel, and I let people come and stay in my home to sort of observe and participate. Is that the idea?
Well, formally, we don't have a definition of what homestay is.
I know that. If you could actually, just give me your best.
Actually, we do.
We're disallowing.
I was looking in the wrong place.
Something here.
In the definitions, it's not under H for homestay. It's under lodging hyphen homestays,
okay.
Land use. And I'd be happy to read that.
That would be great.
Lovely. Residential structures in residential single-family and residential suburban neighborhoods with a family and permanent residence where no more than two bedrooms without cooking facilities are rented for overnight lodging. Does not include provision of meals. This definition does not include bed and breakfast facilities, hotels and motels, which are defined separately, rooming and boarding houses, which are included under multifamily dwellings, or the rental of an entire residence for 1 week or longer. So the short answer to your question, and I'm sorry we went around the barn, is that this homestays only applies to houses in the residential single family and the residential suburban land use category.
So it doesn't even belong here.
Correct.
No, it's not allowed in the ag category.
It's not allowed in the ag category. But what we did back in 1991 when we first did Table 2 is we just used all of what used to be Table O in the land use ordinance.
So it's not an allowed use in agriculture. It's automatically not an allowed use in the rules of procedure.
I guess so. But so it changes then in the ag land use to farmstay.
or it would be allowed?
That is part of the discussions that will be taking place.
That's what we're doing as part of the
part of the update of the lodging.
Okay, got it.
And our preliminary discussion with the review committee was farm stays seems like a logical thing to have on contracted land, but we'll wait till the ordinance amendments get adopted and then look at that again.
It is not currently part of the adopted list. Homestays is really not appropriately placed in this list.
Mm-hmm.
So would we not delete that line?
It could be. I mean,
it's not allowed in the ag zoning, and you have to be in the ag zoning to have.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, but as far as it goes, the more things maybe specifically on the list,
it's kind of a placeholder so that when you're looking for something, you know that it's clearly excluded as opposed to just not on the list. So it's a placeholder. It does clarify that it's not allowed. So
there's a lot of stuff in here like hotels and motels. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed.
Okay.
And I'm sure they're not allowed in ag.
It's exactly what Mr. Waller said was exactly right. Back in 1991, when we came up with this version of Table 2, when I say we, I mean the review committee, the intent was to take Table O from the land use ordinance and just put it in there so that someone could.
And then is residential density. As we've heard, the Farm Bureau would recommend striking that last sentence requiring farm support quarters. So I would not support that. I would support leaving in staff's recommended.
Others sentence. Agree?
That farm support quarters be left specified.
Did we agree on one?
Well, one is just support for that.
Okay.
I was assuming that there was general support for that. I'm mistaken.
Sure, yes, I support it.
Okay. Yeah.
And the continuing to use farm support headquarters. Farm support quarters, which staff has recommended, is there an agreement on that issue? Turning that paragraph around a little bit. Bob, maybe you have an idea of how you want us to proceed. You appear to.
Well, I thought we'd start at the beginning, like say on page 411, and run through it. You know? And we're going to get to these issues one by one, rather than bounce all over the place.
Okay.
That's fine. Fine with me.
Okay.
That way as well.
On page 411, it's been suggested that we add the Table 1 language as far as the minimum acreage, which I believe was left out. Is that correct? Is staff ready for us on this? I wrote a note to that effect for some reason.
And I would certainly support that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're not on the mic.
Turn on my mic. Is the table.
I think it was in the back, the table that was part of the.
Out of the negative declaration. And it is on page 432. And the middle column proposed amendment, it's the second box. And it says minimum preserve size 20 acres gross, minimum soil requirements 10 of the 20 acres must be class 1 or 2 soils, fully planted and irrigated crops, excluding some home sites, accessory structures, and land not suited as farmland. Productivity requirements, that's a big long one. I'm not going to read it verbatim.
Okay.
But it basically says you have to produce at least an annual gross value of $2,000 or more per acre for 3 of the prior 5 years. Minimum parcel size for division or conveyance, class 1, 20 acres, class 2, 40 acres. And then in parentheses, these specialized prime land preserve standards mirror current standards in the rules of procedure and should not be used as a basis for smaller parcel sizes and land divisions. So I would suggest taking all the wording in that box. Does the recording secretary know what it is?
On page 4-32, table 1, proposed amendment.
Everything in this box here.
Okay. Do you have the ability, Mr. Waller, to put some of this up on the screen?
I guess so, using this.
Oh,
but you can't.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to read it.
Then.
Well,
okay. I'm sorry.
Well, it's all right.
Ms. Griffin, you know, was really good at putting all that stuff up there. she gets it on her computer somewhere or another and puts it there. Mm-hmm. And I get
okay, is there consensus that this is the wording that would be incorporated into Exhibit A in the appropriate place?
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But I do have a question on it.
Okay. But there's a consensus that I am not hearing from. Yes?
But the appropriate places, so we're looking at on this item one then, adding these?
Exhibit A.
It goes in Exhibit A, and let's let staff worry about
decide
exactly
where
to stick it.
Where they're sticking it.
Okay.
We don't care where.
There is a consensus, and Commissioner Rose has a question.
What did you mean by excluding home sites, accessory structures, land not suited as farmlands? We're talking if you've got this 20-acre parcel and he has a one-acre home site, are we out of the tension then? We can't count on this? In other words, you need a 21-acre parcel to have your home site and barns and stuff on?
It's just clarifying that if you have structures, they're excluded from the calculation. Because that question comes up sometimes with people that have, you know, a fair number of outbuildings and larger barns and a house.
And that's the current rules.
Okay.
It just clarifies it. It's
but I don't know.
In practice anyway.
Maybe it clarifies it for everybody but me.
But it's requiring 10 to be Class 1 or Class 2, right? So it's specifying that the 10 not be structures? Am I mistaken there? Or thinking
back to my example.
I don't. I thought with a 20-acre, as long as 10 are Class 1 or Class 2 and not covered by or being counted with structures. So you wouldn't need a 21-acre parcel. I don't know where.
Well, maybe staff could help me with that. Answer my question. I got 20 acres. Can I have a home?
For Class 2, you would need 21 acres, essentially, if you have structures on it. I clarify.
If you did have Class 2.
Yeah. Right. But in the case of Class 1, I mean, it just makes sense that the qualifying soils don't have structures on them. I mean, that's
right.
The main gist of it.
Okay.
Okay, are you all right with that?
Finally.
Okay. Moving on to 4-12, which actually includes Exhibit A, or just part of Exhibit A. Are there any comments or changes to the recommendations?
Not on page 4-12, but I had a question at the bottom of 4-11. Where you say, ag enterprises on two or more discontinuous parcels under a single contract must be functionally operational on a collective basis. What does that mean?
Thank you, Rev.
Oh, Terry's tossing it to me.
Warren's very familiar with that wording.
Yeah, I kind of came. We had a very lengthy discussion at the Ag Preserve Review Committee about, you know, you can have two pieces of property that aren't physically touching in the same contract. You know, they're bound together, especially mm-hmm. if you don't meet the minimum parcel sizes individually. And there was a concern that there should be more than just the ability to take two parcels anywhere in the county, one in the extreme northeast corner of the county and one in the extreme southwest corner of the county, and put them in the same contract. And we went around and around, and we tried to quantify it, and we tried to put miles, and we finally came down to, well, all of these, a new contract is subject to Ag Reserve Review Committee review and recommendation anyway, and then subject to board approval. And what the committee decided was, well, let's add a few more words that we want some sort of logical connection between the two discontiguous parcels, that they are, you know, we use the example of, like, in the Alpamar area, there's, you know, different 80-acre parcels that are good for dry farming, and they're leased out to the same operator or owned by the same operator who moves his equipment very easily from one parcel to the next as needed for cultivation and harvesting and so on. And that being a mile, 2 miles, 3 miles apart didn't really matter. It was functionally operational as a single enterprise. But someone who had a grazing land in the extreme northeast of the county and then had maybe a small row crop property in the southwest corner of the county that's separated by, you know, 70, 80, 90 miles and two totally different kinds of operations that don't require shared equipment was not really some sort of collective functional operation. So I'm doing
I'm probably not doing a real good job of trying to explain why we came up with these words, but that was the idea we were trying to capture. And Linda, if you can jump in if you can help me. But the idea was, if they're discontiguous species, there should be some functional relationship between the two.
I think I understand that, or probably we all do, but why no more clarification then, or qualification of...
They couldn't come up with it in several hours, and we're probably not going to in a few minutes.
Linda Kennecke, Ag Department, Commissioner Rose had it. We spoke for an extremely long time, and these are the words we finally all agreed upon, with the understanding that these come before the committee, so we'll be evaluating it in terms of, again, functioning as one ag enterprise.
So Guy's got some vineyard here and a dry farm over there. They're not going to work together.
Not necessarily.
That could be something, again, if there's shared equipment, that type of thing. And I think because when we started to clarify it with words, it became more difficult to understand. And so, again, after a considerable amount of discussion, these were the words that were selected.
If I might also add, I think the feeling was that there's such a real variety of different situations that come up. As soon as you set one set of criteria that seems to work for one, another one will come to mind where it won't work, and it becomes inordinately complicated to try to conceive of every possible situation that might come up. And also, I think the basic feeling that I got from it was these discontiguous parcels can't be contrived. They have to pass a basic reasonableness test. And if you walk away with just that sense of it, I think that's what was intended.
Okay, I understand, and I'm not going to try to come up with some better words. And that'll stay in their collective wisdom of your committee.
4-12, I believe I didn't hear any changes or comments. 4-13.
I have a note here. Meaning? What does this mean?
I'm sorry, what was your question again?
I don't understand the meaning of this, and it's probably just my ignorance of these.
No. I didn't. My ignorance, too.
Maybe we have another explanation.
There's a fair amount of angst over this, and the review committee felt that this shouldn't be setting a precedent. It shouldn't be something that's done as regular practice, because too many situations could come up where you have a single parcel. Half of it's got the restrictions from the land use ordinance only, and the other half is more restricted. So there was a basic feeling that there would be a mix of compatible and non-compatible uses on a property, which would lead to complications and essentially violate the spirit of the Williamson Act. So,
okay, does that answer people's questions on this issue?
I will add one more thing. This doesn't prevent someone from electing to leave a legal parcel, a whole legal parcel, out of his contract. Mm-hmm. He can do that.
Right.
He or she can do that.
I think it had to do with he was concerned about whether what he was going to put on in the winery could be considered commercial and may run afoul of the LARB bill. He was carving that out.
That's certainly.
And I think some other counties, I think Santa Barbara County, requires that when you put a parcel in, you put the whole parcel in.
But now that we're clarifying all of that, it almost becomes a moot point.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, I have been asked a question. It is 12:20. We normally take a lunch break at 12. Is there? I hate to preempt people's ability to discuss, but is there going to be a lot of comment on table two?
No, I'd prefer to keep going.
I would too.
Do we need just a short break?
That would be nice. Yeah.
No, and be nice.
We're in the middle.
Okay, let's take a 10-minute break. So we'll be back here at 12:30.
Okay.
Okay, and then we'll continue on with the rest.
Yep. We'll finish. Notes. You know, that makes you go read the note and apply it.
So you're saying what I think I want you to, that to leave note four, that it would still require review and recommendations by the committee and note 10?
I'm only
under change.
I'm only suggesting consistency because we have identified. Please, someone else help me out. We have bed and breakfasts and something else that are part of the ag tourism.
Right. Well, this is, so in the consistency argument, I mean, this rural camping and recreation is part of the update.
And so the current designation would stay.
Well, I guess that's the question, whether it would or wouldn't.
What I heard the suggestion from the chair was to leave the yes so it continues to be allowed under its present circumstances. And instead of note 4, which would require individual review committee review of the proposal, put in note 10, which says it'll be revisited when the Land Use Ordinance Ag Tourism package is completed.
And that's only for consistency. It's not necessarily that I agree it's appropriate, but it's to be consistent with the other one or two items that have the same designation.
But what's wrong with having note 4 in there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and note 10.
That's what I think.
Yeah, the committee is recommending.
Okay, we got 3 of us. The heck with you.
Okay, yes, yes remains, and note 4 and note 10. Is that correct?
No, that is not correct.
No.
The yes is removed, and it's replaced with note 4 and 10.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. Okay. Are there any other comments on page 416? Hearing none, 417.
Here, correct me if I'm wrong, that quarries were are really not part of stone and cut stone because we have sufficient definition later on with mining that will allow these small quarries.
That's what I heard.
Correct.
Okay. So the suggested changes to small-scale manufacturing stone and cut stone products, the recommendation is that no be inserted. Is that correct?
Leave it as staff presented it.
All right. Any other comments on page 417? Oh, my goodness, 418. We have a bunch, but maybe they're not. Any changes suggested to 418?
Anywhere on prime soils, and it would say single-family dwellings, mobile homes, and farm support quarters in the coastal zone shall not be located on prime ag soils unless there is no other building site on the ownership that is all of the following. A, on other than prime soils, less than 20% slope, not within a designated flood hazard combining designation. So
we would work, the recommendation is to change note 9 to note 11.
Okay.
And to add the words in 11 into the list. Am I correct?
No. What the change would be on, I keep going back and forth. Okay, so on 418, you would, replace the no under prime soils, coastal zone prime soils, replace that no with notes 9 and 11. For single family dwellings, for mobile homes, and for farm support quarters.
Okay, the farm support quarters under prime soils would not have the designation no, but would have a new note 11.
9 and 11.
Pardon me, 9 and 11.
And it would be the same.
Would you leave yes in there then? Warren?
No, we would not.
No, there are some that don't have yes and no, I guess.
No.
Excuse me, so it would be notes 9 and 11 on farm support quarters and single family dwelling?
And mobile homes also.
And mobile homes.
Mobile homes? Okay.
Not mobile home parks, just mobile homes.
Got it.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree.
And we'll obviously have to add to note 11 when we get there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Are there other comments on this page?
Well, we just talked about the food and beverage retail sales, so it sounded like there was consensus to leave that out, is my guess, but I'm not sure we reached that already.
No, I think staff was saying that eating and drinking places is not part of the ongoing discussion as far as ag tourism.
Yeah.
Okay, right, not as part of ag tourism, but the Farm Bureau has
I don't think that three of us agreed that that would be appropriate.
Okay, just making sure.
I don't
sure.
want to speak for others.
Just making
I
sure.
I just need a little clarity. I think I agree with you, but before I come down firmly, I want you to somebody to describe the typical tasting room, why that's not going to be thrown
out. Oh, that's entirely in a different definition.
So I got a tasting
room. Tasting room is an accessory use to a winery, which is included in ag processing, and it's in a totally different place.
And I got this tasting room, and they offer, for the designated driver, they offer them cookies and Cokes. That's okay? All right. I'm seeing you nod yes. And they also have winemaker dinners occasionally.
That's okay.
Because why?
That's a wine industry-related event.
Okay.
But we had an example where a winery was requesting a kitchen that was much larger than would be an auxiliary use to a wine tasting, and that was denied by the or excluded by the commission because they felt it wasn't eating and wine. My memory is okay.
That was a, it was actually reduced in size to be
right.
clearly accessory,
right.
just preparing food items per health department requirements for the tasting room.
Yeah. Right, for the tea and crumpets that the designated drivers.
Is there a consensus that eating and drinking places should not be allowed?
Yes.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So are there any other comments on 4.8?
Madam Chair, I had one question about the residential uses, notes 9 and 11. Was that for farm support and mobile homes or
yes.
Farm support, mobile homes, and single-family dwellings.
All three, I believe.
Yes. All three? Okay.
So it should be all three.
Thank
yes.
you.
Any other comments on 4.18? 4.19.
The
419.
Oh, I thought.
Do you mind if I jump in where I have notes? Mm-hmm.
Of course not.
There was a suggestion from the Ag Department. Accessory equestrian exhibit facilities and large scale horse ranches, wrapping around to the next line semicolon. I believe that what the Ag Department was recommending was after horse ranches, so it would apply to riding academies, accessory equestrian exhibition facilities, and large-scale horse ranches, you would put in subject to agricultural preserve review committee review and recommendations per footnote 4.
Is there a consensus on that?
Mm-hmm. That
I support the idea. I didn't quite follow where he was putting it, but I guess...
I think he's saying what we hoped he was saying.
There's a significance to where it's being put. Because if we put it in the table, it would apply to all specialized animal facilities, and I don't believe that was the intent. If we put it in the definition that's here, directly with the riding academies, the exhibition facilities, and the horse ranches, then that requirement for review of individual proposals only applies to those proposals and not
everything. Because we don't need horses anymore.
So it's right after ranches and before the semicolon at the next
Correct.
To the last line?
In the seventh line, it would go after the word ranches and before the semicolon.
Is that clear to the commissioners?
Well, I'm just wondering, is that clear because the sentence includes the other poultry stuff? So that's clear enough, then that's meant to apply just to the writing?
Well, you could put it in parentheses, and if it's following the word ranches and it's before the semicolon, then...
Okay, then it's clear.
Then
it's,
you wouldn't interpret it as applying to anything else.
Okay. I think that would be clearer.
Okay. Yeah, that, just making sure I hadn't heard that.
And we can put it in parentheses.
Yeah,
and it does it or does it... I don't want to raise another issue. It does or does not apply to kennels?
No.
Okay, because there's a semicolon.
Yes. It goes before the semicolon. I'm pretty sure the review committee does not want to look at kennels.
Are we allowing kennels in ag preserves now?
If they're incidental.
Yeah, if they're incidental.
Okay.
Okay. Are we ready to move on to page 421? 421, I believe that we're adding footnote number 11 with the definition as shown on page 465.
I think we're all agreeing with that. Hopefully we will.
Wasn't there a suggestion of the Ag Department after landing strips on footnote 7 to add that reference to footnote 4 again?
Okay.
And I thought there was also a further recommendation from the Ag Department to take the word marketing out of the definition.
There was a request. Is there a consensus to take out marketing or management of agricultural products?
Just reading it here.
No.
So we're at number 7, airfields and landing strips. Must demonstrate they're linked and in support of Ag Enterprise on site. So Nick's to take out marketing is the suggestion, and then to add something from also add the footnote 4 review, subject to review. Is that what we're the recommendation we're looking at? Okay.
Not quite understanding how marketing and management gets in under airstrips.
Okay, I got my strawberry fields, okay, and I think that getting them to market in a hurry really matters. So I got my own private airstrip, and as soon as I pick the strawberries, I hand them to Gene's helicopter, and he dashes them off to whoever's paying for this.
No, that's transporting of ag products. What marketing would be is bringing in the buyers from the grocery store chains to sample your strawberries.
And that can promote
the product.
So understanding that could go anywhere.
Well, flying them in. Am I correct? Flying them in to show them the product.
Okay, that makes sense.
And you think it should be allowed or should not?
The recommendation from the Ag Department is to not allow that.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know, Linda, if you want to expand.
I think we understand the issue. Okay. It's really up to us to decide whether it's appropriate or not.
But we heard just marketing here, but what about, I heard Chairwoman Rappa read also question the management too, marketing or management of agricultural products.
That was what I highlighted as the request from the Ag Department.
Marketing and or management.
Took out management. Both marketing and management.
Yeah. It says marketing or management of agricultural.
A bunch of farmers could argue about it.
Linda Kennecke, County Ag Department. Based on discussions of a workshop we had at the end of September with the Department of Conservation, they specifically pulled out airstrips in terms of compatible uses and identified that it was not for convenience purposes, and I explicitly asked the question regarding this, knowing that it was in our documents, and they said no, that it would not be for marketing purposes. So the recommendation that I have before you is to take that out, and management is what I had initially stated. It's not something I feel as strongly about as marketing. But if it was stated the crop spraying, transportation, or production of agricultural products would capture what's needed and would also reflect what was stated in the workshop we had. And in addition, if the footnote 4 from page 420 were added as well, it would give the APRC the opportunity to review those projects, so it wouldn't be a staff call. They could be making it as well. Allow for that flexibility.
This workshop you attended, the
review body did not have benefit of additional comments after that. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And was this just, no, I don't know how to say this nicely. Was this just an opinion, or was this what the Department of, I'm sorry, but some of this gets a little beyond me. The Department of Conservation, is that what you are going to use to evaluate whether or not we are in compliance or not?
It was a statement made by a staff member with the Department of Conservation, and it was a workshop that only was for staff. I thought this would provide us with clarity that, based on their position, and that it be solely related to the ag on site. And if there's discomfort with that, with removing these words for the reasons that Commissioner Rose brought up, at the very least, the referring it back to the APRC will give the opportunity to make the call. So there were two concerns there, and our department was just recommending potential changes. But at the very least, it's something that could be referred back to APRC.
Okay.
Could we ask the Farm Bureau if they have an opinion on this?
Our board has not talked about that. We like the
language. You got to be on the mic. And I know the board hadn't talked about it, but you and your
we're pretty much like the Ag Preserve Review Committee. We're not privy to that conversation and information that Linda brought forward. So if that is something that the California Conservation Department is looking at, then that's something we need to take back to our board.
Thank you. So perhaps the best way to approach this is the note 4. Only where do we put the note 4? Put it back on the page, or do we put it as a footnote to this footnote? Or
I like the parentheses idea there.
Well, since there isn't a whole laundry list of different uses in this particular definition, airfields and landing strips is it. You could just add note 4 to where it's located on the table. Just add it to footnote 7.
And that would be on page?
I'm looking for it. It would be on page 419.
You could add the language that you read into the record, subject to APRC review and recommendation, per footnote 4.
We could do that, or we could simply, on the line under transportation, airfields, and landing strips, where it says yes, note 7, we could put yes, notes 4 and 7.
Good idea.
I like that idea.
Okay.
That's a little simpler.
4 and 7.
And that would apply to inland area and coastal non-prime.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well, since we started on this, I'm just curious. Commissioner Melskow is an agriculturalist, and would you guess that an airstrip would be necessary? Have you got an airstrip on your ranch?
No, but I know of operations that do, and they utilize them.
Oh, yeah.
Integral. But the question is not whether they're useful, but, I mean, how far you could go with the marketing and management is the question, I guess, here. That can go a long ways.
I think it's a question of size and scale and relationship.
So note 4 covers it.
And
okay.
One reason,
all right,
I'm trying to deliberately avoid getting into details, but one reason why the committee reviewed this particular area was there was an extreme example of a very large jet strip proposed on contracted land, and that's why they decided we needed to have some more words in here to talk about it being related to the agricultural enterprise.
Well, yeah, so as long as the committee is looking at it, it's solved. It's just we all have to realize that marketing, as brought up, marketing and management can be taken to extremes and still be valid.
To 30-480, A, B, and C, you always use legal there, so maybe it meant something.
Actually, that changes the meaning of that sentence, and staff would not recommend it.
Yeah, I think minimum parcel size has its own meaning.
Terminology under the rules of procedure. And they're absolutely trying to distinguish between minimum parcel size in the contract and a legal parcel.
Right.
Put the word legal in there, it's going to just confuse it that much more.
I agree.
Okay.
Other comments on number 9?
We never did
we're going to keep that last sentence in or not?
What? I'm in support of keeping the last sentence in.
In.
What do you think, Gene?
I don't know.
I think Farm Bureau, what do they want to do?
They already wanted it, said they wanted it out. And I think we need to go back to the purpose of what the whole Williamson Act and all of it is about, is that it is, the purpose is to protect and enhance ag activities. Mm-hmm. And sprouting houses all around is not what the purpose is. Mm-hmm. But having farm-related quarters is certainly appropriate, in my opinion.
True, yeah.
And since the ordinance already spells the procedure for us having those out, it seems to make sense to tie that in.
Well, I would agree with that, but I'm still stuck with the family farm situation where we have a farm enterprise and they're supplementing their income by working in town, and maybe one brother is working in town and the other brother is kind of taking care of things on their home ranch. And
I believe that the explanation was given, Bob, that pre-existing structures do not come under this. Am I correct? It's anything after January 1, 2004.
There's one other nuance here too that might help ease your concern. The sentence before talks about you have to demonstrate compliance with the principles of compatibility and the layered bill provisions of the Williamson Act. Then it goes on, the next sentence talks about the farm support quarters provisions. It says, in most cases, it will be necessary to qualify the multiple residences as farm support quarters under these ordinance sections. So if we could find a situation where the multiple residence is consistent with the principles of compatibility in the Laird bill, it may not require qualification as a farm support quarters.
Could we add that additional language?
I think it says it already.
It already says it.
I've been here and I've seen people get all concerned about language, then make it a little clearer.
You could change the will to may. It will. In most cases, it may be necessary instead of it will be necessary. Okay. I personally think it's what's there now captures what the review committee is recommending.
Okay. I like going to may.
Yeah, I do too.
In most cases, it may.
That's about as wishy-washy as you can get, guys.
What kind of ordinance?
Well,
not very.
I'm going to go back to the pre-2004, and because this applies to all those contracts that have been initiated since 1969, people are going to get concerned about that and may not know that the Laird bill does exclude that. So I'm.
Well, then maybe there could be some reference to that if you're concerned. But we've heard there's an explicit exclusion, so that's a non-issue.
Well, it's a non-issue if you hire a lawyer and he can find the Laird bill. But I'm talking about Mr. and Mrs. Farmer may not be that familiar with that. And
well, all Mr. and Mrs. Farmer need to do is to give a call to the planning department, and it's clarified.
Mr. Farmer.
We can determine the house that they're in question was built prior to January 1st, 2004. It's not an issue.
Mr. Waller, did you have a comment?
Yes, I just wanted to clarify and maybe help refocus this a little bit. This is primarily intended for new folks coming in right now and asking for multiple residences on contracted property that already has a primary residence. That's what most of this is about. And I agree completely with Warren that it's not going to apply to the multitude of other properties on those 825,000 acres out there that may have multiple residences already. So really it's not about the ones that are already there, it's about the new ones. And the more criteria we have to help people through this, for example, criteria that's already in the land use ordinance, that's already been used, it's really helpful in trying to administer it.
The Laird bill, that it only affects properties after 2004. We want to make things as clear as possible, so we reference our local ordinance as well as the Laird bill.
But you're not correct in that it only applies to new residences. It applies to old residences. Mr. and Mrs. Farmer got these buildings out there that they live in, and they stop working the land. These residences are no longer allowable.
Might I respond?
Yes, certainly.
If you're looking at a situation where there's absolutely no farming activity, whether you just have a residential use of a property that is under contract, it's subject to a county-initiated non-renewal anyway.
Okay. But what if they're leasing the land to somebody else and they're not actively farming it?
It's still an agricultural use.
Right now, as it stands, that's the way all the contracts are structured. The property has to be used at least intermittently. I mean, there are crop rotations, and there are times when they'd have fewer or more cattle on the property, but it has to be used for farming activity. So,
no matter who owns
it. And again, we're not talking about going out and doing something like questioning whether a house should be there anymore or not. We're talking about whether or not it's suitable to be in the Williamson Act program. And if a person has multiple residences on their property and they are in violation of their contract, that's got to be addressed anyway. And that will be the first thing that will be looked at. It will be a county-initiated notice of non-renewal. There are a few properties out there that probably aren't any longer appropriate for the Williamson Act, and that does come up from time to time. But I don't see this going back and being punitive retroactively in any shape or form on a broad basis. It's just not.
So the non-renewal then would be punishment.
If the concern is, would the suitability of a house remaining on a rural property, probably a multiple house, a second house, the first step would be simply to file a county-initiated notice of non-renewal, as far as I understand.
Are we?
And if they're in violation of the contract, then they're not doing any farming, there's no agricultural activity on the property, that's probably appropriate in most people's minds.
But the second residence, okay, back to this, they were farming, but they gave up and they leased the land to the neighbor. And the neighbor is farming it, but they're just living there. Is that okay?
If they are part of the ownership of the property, we would consider them as an operator. They just happen to lease it out.
Who does the farming, I don't think, is the issue. The issue is the property in agricultural use according to the
practical matter is that if there's two existing residences there, and if because of age or other family circumstances they choose to lease out the operation of their ag use, they're, you know, someone else is legitimately conducting an agricultural activity on their property, but it's someone else. And these people are the family that own the property. We wouldn't make an issue of that.
And now, it's nice to hear you say that, but it's not written down any. And that's why I still have this problem with it qualifying the second resident.
That's why we said in most cases. Because you need to, I'll say it one more time, you need to go back to the prior sentence, which talks about principles of compatibility in the Laird Bill. One other provision in the Laird Bill that we didn't talk about is that it only applies when there's cumulative square footages over 2,500 square feet. Now, that's not very much, but if there were two 1,200 square foot houses on the property, then there wouldn't be an issue because it wouldn't be over 2,500 square feet. So that's why we said in most cases we want the flexibility to determine if it's necessary or not. And again, it's only for building new houses. And in terms of follow-up after they're occupied, the practical matter is that unless we get a complaint, it's probably not going to be an issue.
Do we have any type of consensus on number 9?
Madam Chair, so are we deleting the last sentence?
No, that's what I'm trying to determine.
We haven't decided yet.
I'm in favor of leaving number 9 exactly as it is. Others, please chime in.
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt, yes.
All his staff, sir.
Mr. Rose?
No, I don't agree with you.
Mr. Malskow?
Well,
I'm going to agree with them unless we can come up with something to substitute.
Well,
I don't know what that is.
I understand what you're saying about the Laird Bill and the 2004. I just want some words in there that would reflect that, that help
see if this gets anywhere. We could change the last sentence to say, in some cases it may be necessary to qualify the new multiple residences as farm support quarters.
No, I'm not comfortable with the in some cases it may, or in most or some cases it may.
Well, then you could simply...
That loses its a bit of teeth.
Then
that makes it kind of useless. Well, in sometimes it may be may.
Okay.
Then why bother having it?
I understand. I was just trying to respond to him. But now let me go to Plan B.
Okay.
And Plan B is leave the sentence the way it is, except put the word new in front of multiple.
Most cases it will be necessary.
Because that's what we're talking about.
New multiple residents.
Or how about qualify the multiple residence, comma, built after January 1st, 2004?
That's fine.
I mean, it's
that would
very
be one way
clear.
To skin the cat.
Okay.
Is that clear?
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Multiple residence, comma, built after January 1, 2004, comma,
right.
And the rest of the sentence.
Council, is that clear
yes.
for you? That works okay.
Okay.
All right.
And that works okay for staff and
that
Mr. Waller?
Okay. Terry?
I guess so.
I guess.
Is
so.
It Kenny?
How positive can you be?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That'll work.
Mr. Kenneke is saying yes.
Okay. Are there other comments or questions, changes on page 4-21?
We've added the 11, right?
Right.
Yes, we have added footnote number 11 that comes from the page back wherever it was
okay.
that talks about that.
Okay.
465. Okay. Now, 422, I only have Exhibit C. I doubt we're going to disagree on that one. 423 is actually the text of Exhibit C. Commissioners' comments or staff comments on the additions that have been added to this?
No, I didn't really have any quibbles about anything on Exhibit C at all.
Okay. How about Commissioner Melskow?
Nope, I don't have any.
Mr. Wyatt, are you in agreement with the additions?
Well, we're just looking. How many additions are we looking at?
Well, the ones that are underlined there, and then the insert the new language as to the footnotes, which I believe are reflected in the table, if I understand this correctly. Am I understanding it?
Yes, you are. Basically, all these changes do is just say for land under contract, you go to the rules of procedure.
Okay.
That's essentially what we're saying in all the key places in the LUO and CCLUO.
It took me a while to figure that out.
Okay, so is everyone comfortable with the new language and the insertion of the footnotes as delineated into the table? All right, Exhibit D.
That's a negative deck.
Exhibit D.
Negative deck.
That, and I can't quibble about that. I already complimented it. So.
All right. My goodness. Is there anything?
He was here.
You need to wake him up.
He was here. Somebody was patting him.
Can staff tell us if there's anything further we need to discuss before we make our recommendation on this item?
They can't tell us.
Okay,
we can't tell you. Terry, there's nothing further they need to deliberate before they make a motion.
I don't believe so unless you had questions.
Okay, the chair will certainly entertain a motion on this item.
I'll move to receive the staff report, take public testimony, and incorporate all revisions as read into the record this morning.
And this afternoon, too.
And this afternoon. And the environmental determination to the Board of Supervisors.
Is there a second to the motion?
Yes.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Commissioner
Commissioner Miosko?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. All right. Is there another motion?
Yes, I would move that we take any all the materials we received today into the public record.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Well, I believe we stand adjourned.
When is our next meeting?
November 8th.
We stand adjourned then until November 8th.
Ordinary second Thursday.
Correct.